Senate Local Government Committee come to order. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Senator Boltman?
Here.
Senator Poe?
Excused.
Senator Denwell?
Here.
Senator Trevis?
Here.
Senator Vermeer?
Here.
Senator Mandeville?
Here.
Senator Bogner?
Excused.
Senator Zolnikov?
Here.
Chairman Friedel?
Here. Do we have a quorum? Fandiddly-tastic. All right, before we get started, I'd like to give some stuff we need to go through. Make sure that if you are in the room, make sure your phone is either off or on silent. If you are here to testify, make sure you go outside, sign the roster. Make sure you put your first, last name on there and your affiliations. When you do come up to the mic, make sure you say your first name, last name, and spell your last name for the record, and tell me who your affiliation is. What I will do in the beginning is I will give the first proponent 3 minutes, as they will with the opponent. Each additional witness will be getting 1 minute. Does that understand? So what I've been telling everybody the last couple of days, choose your champion because they're the ones that get the 3 minutes. That being said, we will now open up hearing on Senate Bill 336. Senator, would you like to open on your bill?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Forrest Mandeville. That's Forrest Mandeville. I represent Senate District 29, which is Stillwater County, Carbon County, and Eastern Sweetgrass County. And today I'm bringing you Senate Bill 336. This bill would authorize the creation of ambulance districts. Currently in statute, there's no clear process to do so, so this bill would simply provide that guidance. Mr. Chair, I look forward to a good hearing.
Thank you, sir. We will now open on the bill and the testimony taken from proponents. Again, the first person will get 3 minutes, and each additional witness will get 1 minute. As soon as you say your name, spell it, and give me your affiliation, I will start the clock.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Kuntz, K-U-N-T-Z, and I am the fire chief for Red Lodge Fire Rescue. I would like to start out with just giving a little bit of information on ambulance services in general in the state of Montana. You may or may not know that ambulance services are not required in the state of Montana. So when we look at emergency services, all communities are required to have police protection, either through sheriff or police, and they are required to have fire protection. There is no requirement for the provision of emergency medical services or ambulance service. This bill does not solve that problem, and we're not attempting to solve that problem. But it is possible for someone to dial 911 and have the dispatcher say, I'm sorry, we do not provide ambulance service in our area here. So this bill seeks to create a process by which a community that is struggling to provide ambulance service can form a district to help solve that problem. It is just one tool in the toolbox. Currently, in legislation, a municipality can provide ambulance service and tax for the provision of ambulance service. A county can provide ambulance service and tax for the provision of ambulance service, and a rural fire district can do the same thing. But when you get to multiple jurisdictions and ambulance services generally are provided geographically through multiple jurisdictions, it is very difficult to provide that. It can be formed through a multi-jurisdictional service district, but the process is complex and it is not clear. And most ambulance services in the state currently is provided through volunteer organizations. These organizations are actually private companies. They're private individual companies that provide ambulance service. They are not governmental organizations. And there is no requirement for them to provide the services that they are doing. And most community members, even many of these volunteer organizations, don't realize their relationship between them and the community. And unfortunately, many of them are failing. There have been many cases, and there's two that I'd like to just go through quickly. One is a person picks up the phone, dials 911, and says, I'm having a heart attack, I'm having chest pain. The dispatcher pages the local ambulance service, nobody answers. The dispatcher pages the local ambulance service, again, no one answers. Dispatcher pages the local ambulance service a third time, nobody answers. Dispatcher pages the next ambulance service over, nobody answers. Dispatcher pages that second ambulance service a second time, nobody answers. Dispatch pages a third ambulance service. They respond to this residence. They arrive approximately 45 to 50 minutes after that person dialed 911 and the person's dead and non-salvageable. This is happening throughout our state, unfortunately, and our ambulance services are struggling to provide that basic service. Again, the formation of ambulance districts is not going to solve this problem for everybody, but it provides a clear methodology where a community that says, hey, we have a problem and we need to solve this problem, they can look in statute, see how to form an ambulance district, what steps they need to do, and they can ask their community, would you like to support the formation of an ambulance district and the provision of ambulance service? So that's how this seeks to solve the problem. Again, it is not the golden ticket, but it will be able to help some communities do that.
Thank you. Next proponent on Senate Bill 336.
Barbara Mutter, M-U-T-T-E-R, representing Three Forks Area Ambulance Service. Our ambulance service is currently in crisis. We serve an area of approximately 500 square miles. The western part of Gallatin County, South Broadwater County, and pockets of Jefferson County. We currently have 10 volunteers and one driver, and out of that, 11 people, two are active. In southwestern Montana, to obtain a EMT license from several different independent emergency education businesses, the cost is between $1,200 and $1,800 to get an EMT license, and then asking those people to volunteer and paying that money out of pocket with rising house costs and rising costs of living. We need people. I will tell you what Chief Kuhn said is true. I attended a Broadwater County Development Committee meeting last October, and emergency services was high on the list in the discussion in the community. A gal stood up. Her 46-year-old husband presented with chest pain. We had no volunteers to respond to her incident. Again, dispatch paged out, and there was no one. Dispatch paged out, there was no one. AMR responded out of Bozeman, and 70 minutes later arrived at the house, and that gentleman passed away, and she in South Broadwater County is left with a mortgage and three children to raise. And that's up close and personal. This bill gives us that mechanism to go to the communities and form a district and possibly receive funding. We need people. We're not lacking a station.
Thank
We're
you.
Not lacking ambulances. We need people.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Allie Kuntz, K-U-N-T-Z. I am a volunteer EMT with Red Lodge Fire Rescue. Like Three Forks, the majority of Montana volunteer EMS organizations are currently struggling to provide basic and advanced care to members of their community. This bill will give these organizations that want to help solve this problem the tools they need to become more proficient at providing care and ultimately saving lives of Montanans. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Mr. Chair, Richard Cowger, C-O-W-G-E-R. I'm the fire chief in Columbus, and I represent the Montana Fire Alliance as well. Just really quick, these are kind of old numbers. 143 transport agencies across the state. 38 of those are fire-based, meaning they're partnering up with their local fire department to provide that EMS service. 19 are hospital-based. 19 are other government, so probably municipality or county, and 67 are private. So what we run up against is when we say private, we're not just talking AMR, Great Falls Emergency Services, we're also talking most of our small volunteer community EMS organizations. So you could have Park City Ambulance Service that's not affiliated with any governmental agency, so therefore they're private. The one thing that happens, or what that does to them, is that cuts them out of a lot of revenue streams that normally some of our public agencies would have. So this bill is designed to try and to get them to be a government agency, to have them the same oversight and care and level that we provide, like our rural fire districts, to get them in a stream to where they can have the foundation to continue service. Thank you, sir.
Apparently somebody put the alarm on. Next proponent for Senate Bill 336.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bob Olson. That's O-L-S-E-N, the president and CEO of the Montana Hospital Association, and we stand in support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next proponent. Is there any other proponents on Senate Bill 336 in the room or in the hallway? Seeing none, Mr. Chase, do I have any online?
Mr. Chair, we do not.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. We will now go on to opponents. Like I said before, I will give 3 minutes to the opposition and 1 minute for each an additional witness. Are there any opposition to Senate Bill 336 in the room or in the hallway? Seeing none, Mr. Campbell, do I have any online?
Mr. Chair, we do not.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. I'm just going to check with you. Do we have any informational witnesses online so I can let you go back to what you're doing?
Mr. Chair, we do not.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Is there any informational witnesses in the room or in the hallway for Senate Bill 336? Seeing none, committee. Questions? Very lively bunch right now. Senator Dunwell.
So, Mr. Chair, question for Mr. Olson, please.
Mr. Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Olson. So how would this bill help hospitals, especially your critical care hospitals?
Well, in Montana's most remote areas, we do rely heavily on emergency medical services supplied by volunteer companies. And the more rural we get, the more we just have to have ambulance to move people to the hospital and to move them from hospital to hospital. So it's critical service for us. We support strengthening that network.
Perfect. Thank you.
Is there any other questions or any comments? Seeing none, Senator, would you like to close in your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, for a good hearing. I'd like to thank the proponents who came all this way to testify on this important bill. I want to stress that this bill, if adopted, does not in itself create anything, just simply creates that mechanism for these communities and these districts to create an ambulance district. So I think it's an important bill. Like was mentioned, this is a tool in the toolbox, and I hope you will support this. Thank you.
Thank you. This will now end the hearing on Senate Bill 336. We will take executive action either tonight or possibly Monday. Safe travels. Is that as fast as I can get you out of here? All right. Committee, we will now open up the hearing on Senate Bill 358. Okay. Trubus is here. Is that he see the next? Okay. All right. We're gonna go past 358 because our sponsor's not here yet, so we will move on to Senate Bill 463's hearing. Senator, would you like to open on your bill?
I'm Senator Jeremy Trebus from Great Falls, Senate District 13, bringing you Senate Bill 463. So this is kind of my omnibus bill. It does three things. The first part, obviously, is on the first page. I was going to skip ahead, but I won't do that. I'll go in order. So it does three things. So bottle clubs, number one, is changing line 16 and 17 in MCA 166306. I guess maybe I should give a little context as to what this is and then how it goes from this to what this would change. So the operations, so I'll read from line 12. The operation of an alcoholic beverage bottle club is prohibited by any individual entity. A bottle club is defined as any individual or entity maintaining, operating, or leasing premises not licensed for the sale of alcoholic beverages in which alcoholic beverages are kept for consumption by members of the public for the purpose of providing a place for consuming alcoholic beverages by members. Well, I said that again, for a fee or other consideration. So what I did is I just redefined it a little bit here with a bottle club does not include a private member club. So switches from public to does not include a private member club in which members store and consume alcohol at the private member club. Now, to stop there for a second, maybe I should have added the words that they bring, not that is provided or sold by the bottle club. So I don't know how bottle clubs have typically operated in the past, if they typically provide it, in which case I could see the point that they, I think the opposition is going to bring here, which I think there was a opposition printout on our desks, which I read through real quick. Again, they're bringing it. They're not making money off it. They're not selling it. Their purpose is to provide a space to store their own in lockers and such, not to provide, sell, or anything like that. So, and then going down to line 20, the term consideration does not include membership dues or fees for a private member club. So consideration would not be the fees or dues that the club collects from members. And so the next piece, so again, this is kind of three policies, but it's all under one title in Montana Code annotated, in case you're wondering, which is the alcohol, marijuana, and tobacco title. So it's all under one broad title of law. So going to page 5 is the part that talks about adding Delta 8, which is a strain of cannabinoid, I believe, if I remember how that all works. And so kind of where this comes from is places like even Colorado, they're banning certain what are called synthetic strains of marijuana that make it more potent and maybe dangerously so. And so it's, I think, sometimes referred to as intoxicating hemp when they take it and concentrate it more than what you see down here in line 6, which is an existing law, which is the 0.3% on a dry weight basis. Don't ask me chemistry questions. I don't know the answer, but that's kind of what this intends to do is. And sorry, let me back up. Why is this here? So let me back up. It's part of, on page 4, there's a definition for marijuana. Oh, maybe not. Sorry, I'm getting lost here. 4, 5. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's at the top of page 5. So marijuana, line 1, 20A. Existing law, marijuana means all plant material from the genus cannabis containing tetrahydrocannabinol, and I had to say that in another hearing today, so I had practice, or seeds of the genus capable of germination. So that's what marijuana means. The next part is what it does not mean, and therefore what I intended to do here, and it's not super clear that the intention, but to essentially ban those products from being, you know, synthetic hemp, to ban it in Montana. If you look up in Google and you look up intoxicating hemp, you'll find one article that references, I think, a bill in Colorado. It's like 22-205. So I think 22 is the year and then 205 is the bill number. If you want to know more about kind of what that's about. And then finally, on the last page, page 7, not quite the last page, it changes the fines for people who allow, let's see, well, let me just read it. It's unlawful for a person to smoke in any area where smoking is prohibited under 20-1-220 or 50-40-104. An establishment that fails to prohibit a person who violates those sections, I'll just paraphrase, shall be subject to a fine of not less than 25 or more than 50 that may be assessed only once per day. So changes the fine structure, strikes the higher fines in that arena of law. And so those are the big three things that this bill does, and I will sit down and be quiet. Thanks.
Thank you. We will now go on to testimony on Senate Bill 463. Again, like the last bill, we'll give the first proponent 3 minutes. Each additional proponent will have 1 minute. Same with the opposition, so choose your champion wisely. So we will open up for proponents on Senate Bill 463. Are there any proponents in the room or in the hallway? Pro. As in, like, I went pro. Any online, Mr. Campbell?
Mr. Chair, there is not.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Seeing none, we will now go to opponents for Senate Bill 463. Again, I will give 3 minutes to the first speaker and one additional minute for each additional speaker. So, again, choose your champion wisely. First opponent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Iverson representing the Montana Tavern Association, I-V-E-R-S-O-N. We have a couple problems with this bill. If you really just read the bill, if you read the definition of what a bottle club is, we define a bottle club, and then we say that a bottle club is not a bottle club. And we define consideration, and then we say that consideration is not consideration. And so we've just we wiped out the entire statute. If you're going to do it this way, you might as well just eliminate the statute and say bottle clubs allowed, because that's what we're doing. And so let's talk about what bottle clubs are. In Montana, including every other jurisdiction, we regulate alcohol. Montana regulates it in its own unique way, as does every other state. But what this will allow is people to operate entirely outside of that entire structure of rules. And I would propose to you that the idea that it's a private club should not give you any comfort, because in Utah, for the longest time, every single bar was a private club. And so all you had to do was sign your name in the book, hand them a dollar, and then you were a permanent member of that club. You're a member of that private club now, and you can freely come and go as you see fit and purchase alcohol there. And so this idea that it's private and so it's somehow exclusive is a farce. If the people that operate these choose to, it'll be open to anyone that wants to walk in the door. You'll just have to sign up to be in the club. So let's think about this. These are unregulated rave halls for kids 18 years and older. They pay $20 to get in. They're a member of the private club, and now they can. If they're 21, they'll bring alcohol. Perhaps they'll bring it if they're 18 as well. But it creates a significant loophole in the alcohol code, a significant loophole. If this is going to be the policy of Montana going forward, we should really revisit, why we regulate alcohol at all. And I think we regulate alcohol for good reason. Another thing, I don't have any issue with the marijuana part, but then I would also raise on page 7, section 3, related to the penalties on smoking. As you likely know, the Montana Tavern Association vigorously opposed the Clean Air Act when it was presented, and we negotiated to have a phased-in period to protect those operators with which smoking was an important part of their business. But now the Tavern Association is opposed to bringing smoking back into the tavern, and I'll tell you why. It took me a while to figure this out, and it is. Those owners that opposed it, they've handed those kids those bars over to their children. Their children now operate those bars, and they don't want their kids to be exposed to the smoke that they were exposed to. And so the association has a strong stance against opening up the Clean Air Act. I believe this does open up the Clean Air Act because you've lowered the fine to the point where it's almost for some operators an entry fee. So we'll just pay our $50 fine a day, and we'll operate a bar/casino that allows smoking every day, or perhaps only on the weekends. If the fine, depending on if you're a big community where the $50 doesn't mean much, or a smaller community. But this is absolutely guaranteed going to bring smoking back into bars. There is no doubt about it. And so we have rules. Those rules were thought up by people that sat in your chairs before you, and they've been thought up by you as well. We think this completely disassembles those rules. And for those reasons, we ask that you kill this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Erin McGowan, MCGOWAN, on behalf of Confluence Public Health Alliance. We do oppose this legislation, and I'll just say simply that the Clean Indoor Air Act has been on the books, I guess, for about 13 years now, and it's working very well. The compliance-based education-based system in terms of monitoring complaints, et cetera, is working. It's working well. So we really urge you to not open that back up. It's a system that's working great, so let's keep it going. Also, Montanans wholeheartedly support this initiative. I think it's somewhere around 80% approval the last time I looked. So I'm sure we have that information for you if you'd like to see it, but I appreciate your opposition to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent or opponent? OPP.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Rhonda Wiggers, W-I-G-G-E-R-S, and I'm standing here before you for the Montana Coin Machine Operators Association. And the only part of the bill that we will address is the smoking ban part. And I was here, and I believe it's been almost 20 years since we actually put that on the books. And it was a struggle, and we opposed it, and then we worked with our members to implement it. And as they went through some tough growing pains to get everyone where they are now, but now it's working. And my fear is that if we lower these fines to the point that it's once again not really a law, that we will go back through the same growing pains and all the same issues and confusion that we had before. This is working, so I'd ask you to leave this part alone and not pass Senate Bill 463.
Thank you. Next proponent or opponent. Jesus. It's one of them days.
Mr. Chairman, Bob Olson from the Montana Hospital Association, that's O-L-S-E-N. We stand in opposition to that Section 3, and you've already heard the reasoning. Happy Friday.
Thank you. Next opponent in the room or in the hallway for Senate Bill 463. Seeing none. Mr. Campbell, do I have any online?
Mr. Chair, we do. We have Liz Albers. Well, just a minute. I apologize. I can't. Liz, will you raise your hand if you're online? I apologize, Mr. Chair. I'll have to be right back. My computer's not allowing me to let online visitors speak. Just one moment.
No problem, sir. Take your time. Committee, we're going to take a 5-minute break to let the RMC get that situation taken care of. So let's take a 5-minute break. Thank you.
Thank you for your patience, Mr. Chair. I think I got it now. I'll try to get Liz on.
I'll give you a couple more minutes to think about it. Some of my committee members walked out to have a one-on-one conversation with the Smoking Caucus.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Committee, we will come back from rest and continue the hearing now that we got our issues fixed. Mr. Campbell, you now have a couple people online for opposition for 463, sir.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have Liz Albers. Go ahead, Liz, you should be online.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Liz Albers, for the record. That's A-L, B as in Bozeman, E-R-S. And I'm here representing the American Heart Association. The American Heart Association's mission is to be a relentless force for a world of longer, healthier lives, and accordingly, we have to oppose Senate Bill 463. I also wanted to note that the American Lung Association, the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, and the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network also wanted me to note their opposition to this bill. We oppose Senate Bill 463 as the bill significantly weakens a very effective enforcement protocol for the Montana Clean Indoor Air Act. The Montana Clean Indoor Air Act is one of the most important and popular public health laws in Montana. As noted previously, Montanans strongly support this statewide smoke-free law. Actually, a poll done in 2021, supported by the American Heart Association, the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, found that 89% of Montana voters support the state's Clean Indoor Air Act. The law is working in large part due to the compliance process. The compliance process protocol emphasizes education and communication between local public health and businesses, ensuring successful compliance. This bill could make the relationship between public health and businesses more antagonistic. Simply put, the Clean Indoor Air Act has worked. It is working. Montanans' exposure to secondhand smoke has been significantly reduced as a result of this act. And to maintain this reduction in exposure and the important protection of public health, the law needs to remain as is. We therefore urge a no vote on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent, Mr. Campbell.
Mr. Chair, I did have one more on my list, but they are not online.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. If they do pop online before we get done with this hearing, we'll let me know and we'll pop them in here and get their voice on here. Seeing no more online, we will now go to informational witnesses on Senate Bill 463.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dacia, D-A-C-I-A. English, E-N-G-L-I-S-H. I am the outreach coordinator for Alcoholic Beverage Control Division. I'm informational for section one only.
Thank you. Thank you. Woo. Are there any other informational witnesses in the room?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nicole Aune. Last name is spelled A-U-N-E, and I am here with the Montana Department of Public Human Services, representing the Montana Tobacco Use Prevention Program, and I can answer any questions related to Clean Indoor Air Act compliance.
Thank you. Are there any more informational witnesses in the room or in the hallway for Senate Bill 463? Seeing none, Mr. Campbell, do I have any online?
Mr. Chair, we do not.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Committee, questions? Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor, please.
Sponsor?
Chair, Senator.
Mr. Chair, Senator Treibas, so I am curious, how do you define a private member club? Mm. I mean, okay. Can it be a gym, a health club? You know, can it be, you know, any kind of a club?
Good question, Senator. Mr. Chair, Senator, I was kind of thinking about this over here, and I think it's really best in this bill, in this part, I think it's better contrasted to, say, a definition of a bar or license establishment. I think the contrast would maybe differentiate and provide more context to than what this is and what this is not. Maybe, does that help at all? I can try another shot at it. Let's see. So, Mr. Chair, Senator, I guess, like, if you're talking about a gym or this bottle club, it's, you know, I think part of it is dues. You pay dues, you pay a fee to have access to that property. So if I walk into my local gym and I haven't paid the dues and I'm not a member, they kick me out, right? So it's private in a way. And so I think maybe that's the best way I could broadly define it, is I do to have access.
Follow up, please.
Continue.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tribus, so it could be really any club out there where there are dues-paying members that might agree as a group to provide alcohol, sell alcohol.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think that it would have helped if I would have put in here, and my intent is not for it to be a place where there's economic transactions. There's not transactions where you're paying anything for alcohol. Members would bring their own, in this case, and store their own in lockers that would be provided for them. So it's not my intent to create a bar under a different definition that's not licensed. I'm not trying to circumvent tavern-type regulations.
A follow-up?
Continue.
So it would not then be like the private clubs in Utah? I still live in Salt Lake, so.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator, I'm not super familiar. I just heard that example today. I expect that probably was a result of some sort of state prohibition in some way, but I'm not super familiar enough to really expound on that example.
Okay, thank you. Yep. Thank you. I have another question, but I'll wait my turn. Another question for another witness.
Go ahead. Senator Dunwell, ask your question.
Oh, okay. A question for informational witness Nicole Allen, please, from DPHHS.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Allen, am I pronouncing that correctly?
It's Ani.
Ani.
It's well, a tricky one.
thank you. So you mentioned the compliance program. Could you elaborate on that and like how well it's working over these years now?
Yes. So as outlined in state law, there's a series of steps that we go through before even finding a business. So the first violation, we'd actually give them an educational letter to let them know the law and give them an opportunity to come into compliance. Then the next violation within that 3-year period, it would be a warning letter. The next violation is a reprimand letter, and then after that, then it's finally escalated into a citation status. This does sound like a lot of steps, but it has been very effective in the 14 years that we've been implementing this. 90% of violations have been resolved with an educational or with a letter and education, so haven't even needed to escalate to a fine. So with this, we would be looking at the moment we would have a violation, we would be fining the business right away without any education.
And Mr. Chair, can I ask her a quick follow-up?
Continue.
Like, what do you think about that, fining them right away?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunwell, remaining informational, I think I would imagine that businesses would not be as appreciative without that educational component. And I think of an example, we have an MOU with DOJ who goes out and conducts compliance checks, and they've incorporated some Clean Indoor Air Act questions into their compliance checks. So they'll look for whether or not the business has signage, whether or not they are allowing smoking in their business. And every month we get a report from them, and most of the time there's a few businesses that don't have signage. So DOJ right then and there will hand them a signage, and the issue will be done. They'll be in compliance. But under this bill, that would be considered a violation, and they would be hit with a fine right away for not having signs up.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
Senator Mandeville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Tribus. It sounds like there's a significant fine portion of this bill, so I'm wondering if there was a fiscal note requested or if we should expect to see one.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'd have to look at the website to see if, you know, it would have okay, so doesn't sound like it. You might redirect the question because I don't believe so.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Continue.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tribus, while I definitely admire your ability to bring bills with significantly more opponents than proponents, I'm wondering, since the opposition seems focused on sections 1 and 3, would you be amenable to striking section 1 and 3 and moving forward with just section 2?
Mr. Chair, Senator, obviously I consider that as a possibility because I obviously knew which parts of this bill were going to be controversial and which ones weren't, but I think we should talk about that as a committee more. It's not super opposed. Obviously, I wouldn't love that, but, you know, we'll have to talk about it more before EA.
Thank you, Senator Pope.
Yes, for Mr. Chair, for Ms. Elney. Just Mr. Chair, Ms. Elney, thank you. Just following up on that last set of questions, because I think what I'm hearing is that the program's actually working pretty well, your program, and I thought I would just ask how many citations. I mean, is it, I don't even know, is the citation when they get the letter, or is it when they have to pay something eventually, and all that stuff? How could you describe that?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Pope, yes, so the citation is when they would actually be fined. So I mentioned that 90% of our valid complaints are resolved with the letters and the education. So then about 9% of them are then escalated into this citation status. Then it's up to the local health department, boards of health, to work with their county attorney to determine if a citation is warranted. So only a handful of our complaints over the years have actually resulted in that citation and working with the county attorney. So, and if we're talking about, this is over the full duration of the Clean Indoor Air Act, so if we're talking about in the last 5 years, we've actually only had two businesses that have escalated into that citation status. So we do feel like the system that we have in place is very effective. And just a little like tidbit of information that I'm proud of. There was a study that was put out a few years ago that found actually our state is number one in the nation for protecting indoor workers from secondhand smoke exposure. So I feel very proud of that. I think everybody in our state should be proud of that as well.
That's great. And I guess, Mr. Chair, just one more question.
Continue.
Thank you. And Ms. Elney, thank you. I would just ask, I mean, it's hard to have a trend when you've only had a couple of incidents or citations, I should say. I mean, when you're out in the field, are you feeling like generally people are basically starting to really get the idea? And we've heard from others here that, you know, this has been acceptable to folks who 9 years ago wouldn't have been on board. So is this trend declining for you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pope, yes, it definitely is declining over the years. I do have some trend data I can share with you. So from in 2009, this was after the full implementation of the Clean Indoor Air Act, we had 32 complaints in 22 counties. And then in 2022, we had 9 valid complaints in 7 counties. Or sorry, this is businesses, 32 businesses with complaints in 22 counties in 2009, 9 businesses with complaints in only 7 counties in 2022. So we've seen a significant decline in complaints, and the more significant issues that we had that escalated to citations, those were all within the first 3 years after the implementation of the Clean Indoor Air Act.
Well, thank you and congratulations, thank Mr. Chair.
Senator Boldman.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So, I have a question for Ms. Ani. That's why I was trying to catch her, but.
It's okay. More steps for me.
Thanks a lot. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So I actually, as a big proponent of the Montana Clean Indoor Air Act, I actually am a little confused on really how much effect this bill really would have. So let's just start, because there's a lot going on here. Let's start with Section 3, which is what you were commenting on. So there were questions about what the definition of, I guess, a private club or something. Is that, because in my understanding of the Montana Clean Air Act, you can already smoke inside in a private club, correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator, it is my understanding that that section of this bill does not pertain to the Clean Indoor Air Act, so I'm not sure I'm able to answer that question.
Well, so, Mr. Chairman, I think that Follow up. So, in the Montana Clean Air Act, an enclosed public space is where you can't smoke now under the law. I know that there's several private clubs in the state of Montana that allow smoking, and the courts have actually found that they're allowed to do that because that's not an enclosed public space, it's a private space. And so it looks to me like in Section 3, all the senator's bill is attempting to do is changing the penalty section so that it's unlawful. And this is on, this is in lines 25, 26, 27. That the penalty section is now that it's the establishment that is going to be fined, so the restaurant or bar, and not the actual person. So not the not the waiter, not the bartender. Now he's saying, but there still can be fined every single day that they violate the Montana Clean Indoor Act. Isn't that how you read that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, so it does change it from a person who owns, manages, operates, or otherwise controls a public place or place of employment to an establishment. And an establishment is defined in the Clean Indoor Air Act. So it's hard to say exactly how that would change things with that definition change.
So under 20, on, Mr. Chair, follow up. Yeah, so under 50-40-103 definitions, the establishment is still the agency, the corporation, or the legal entity responsible. So Red Robin would have to pay, or Hooters, or whoever. But what it looks like the bill does is that it just changes it so that there's just a fine every single day, and it takes out the requirement that somebody would have to go in and first give a warning and then, you know what I mean? I mean, certainly it changes the fine structure somewhat, but it, in some ways it makes the fining structure immediately more stringent, and it makes the corporations responsible and not the fact that the waitress on duty, like somebody possibly violated the Montana Clean Air Act, would be the one who is guilty of it. Do you read it that way?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't believe I read it that way because it is a person who owns, manages, operates, or otherwise controls the public place or place of employment. So an employee would not be the party responsible for that, and the fine and the warning letter would not be addressed to an employee, would be addressed to the owner of that business.
So, but under, just follow up, Mr. Chair. So I was talking about on 25 through 27, the first subsection of penalties, it's they remove a person and now it's an establishment. And under the Montana Clean Air Act, under 50-40-103, an establishment is defined. And so that's why he was, you would take out this part about the corporation being responsible, because now the corporation is responsible in the first section.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I believe I'm following a little bit more closely now what you're saying. Yes, there is. So in the current Clean Indoor Air Act, there would be penalties against somebody who a misdemeanor and a fine of $25 to $100 for somebody who would be found to be smoking in an establishment. And then there's also the separate penalty structure for the business. So the business is held responsible under this penalty structure that's on page 8, lines 1 through 12. And then there currently is penalties against individuals who are found to be smoking. I can't say in my time with the program and doing this work that I've known of anybody, any individual who is found to be smoking, penalized for doing so. Our system is complaint-based, so we receive complaints from the public of smoking occurring in a business, and then we have to verify that those complaints are valid through a series of steps.
So quick follow-up. Mr. Chair, so then if the department or you don't know of any person who's actually violated subsection 1, that the individual human, then why would it matter that they removed that and now it's just the business who would be at fault?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think what does matter is the change in the structure and going from a series of educational opportunities straight to a fine and a minimal fine at that, which some businesses may seem as really nothing. I think it was the Tavern Association that mentioned that it could result in increased incidences of businesses allowing smoking because they see that fine as so minimal.
May I ask a follow-up for the Department of Revenue then?
Continue.
Thanks a lot. So, Mr. Chair, I have a question for the Department of Revenue then. So you heard that the complaint then would be this idea that that you may choose to violate the Montana Clean Air Act as an establishment by either being just paying a $50 a day fine, or you get two warnings, a first and then a second, and then only within 3 years, $100 for the third, $200 for the fourth, and then $500 for the fifth. Is there anything beyond a fifth?
Mr. Chair, Senator Baldwin.
Yes, thank you.
That is in Section 50 and not in Section 16, so that is not in the Alcohol Beverage Code.
Oh, because it's in the Montana Clean Air Act.
Yes.
But, Mr. Chair, may I ask a follow-up?
Continue.
So, but it does say, just for your edification, under Section 50, under penalties in Section 50, 50-40-115, that the penalties imposed under the section may not be considered by the Department of Revenue for the purposes of 16-4-401 or the Department of Justice, blah, 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 blah. So you don't consider anything beyond the $500?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we do not write penalties or tickets out of here. Department of Justice does. And when it's listed for Department of Revenue, it is not the Alcoholic Beverage Control Division that issues those fines. So we do not in this division issue those fines.
So, Mr. Chair, can I ask a follow-up then? I guess, is anyone from DOJ here? Okay, well then how about Mr. Iverson? Mr. Chair, Mr. Iverson, so after you got to your $500 or fifth subsequent violation fine within a three-year period, where in the code is the next step?
Mr. Chair, Senator Baldwin, and this happened to a member of mine because they chose, even at the fine levels, to actively violate this when it went in. What actually got them to stop was page 7, line 26, which is stricken. The manager of the casino got charged criminally and went to jail.
Where are you?
Page 7, line 27. They scratched the criminal charge. It's actually when the employee, the manager of the establishment, went to jail and sat in county for a while. Then they decided they'd start disallowing smoking in their establishment. So that's what goes away that turns this into, I mean, a $50 fee is, I guarantee you, there are casinos in Great Falls that will be happy to pay $50 a day and to allow smoking. And they will make that up in revenue because there are people that still smoke, and there are people that like to go and gamble and drink and smoke all at once. And so if you do this, it will happen. I guarantee it.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. So just in light of the bottle club provision, but you're not disagreeing that current Montana law would allow, though, the same establishment to establish a private club to smoke inside, correct?
I don't agree that private clubs should be allowed to have smoking, and I don't believe the law says that. And I think it's this odd thing where we say it's private, and so therefore the public doesn't go there. Private clubs invite, it's members of the public. It's not the broadly public, you know. Like, for example, the golf course here in town is a private club. But all you got to do is sign up, and then you're in the club. And so I disagree that this idea that if it's a private club, that's not members of the public that go to it. I believe members of the public go to private clubs. And I believe that the way the law is written, that those members of the public can't be smoking in a enclosed place. And so, you know, the courts may or may not have ruled what they've ruled. I'm not aware of the case law, but I disagree.
So So, Mr. Chair, you're not aware that there's private clubs throughout Montana right now, and the district courts have found in their favor that the definition of the Montana Clean Air Act is, and as long as they operate a private space, then they are allowed to be a private club and smoke indoors. You're not aware of that?
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Boldman, I don't follow this topic that closely, to be honest with you. I try to stay as far away from smoking as possible. But if we're going to allow it at these private cigar clubs, then shouldn't every golf course, every country club be allowed to do it as well? They're all private clubs.
I think it's the different definition under the calling a private club, but versus what's clearly the definition of an enclosed public space under the Montana Clean Air Act. Two different things.
I'm not an expert in this area, but we the Tavern Association simply thinks that the Clean Air Act has been a good thing for the industry. It was a tough transition, as many know, and it was a terribly tough transition. But now that we're there, we don't want to transition back. And if I could wander off for a second, it happened to Great Falls. They started doing these outdoor smoking gambling areas that they called patios. And it was actually the Tavern Association that helped fund the lawsuit to stop that, because you could see this logical conclusion that if we're going to allow it in a private club, then why can't a guy that's engaged in business do it as well? You're subjecting the public to secondhand smoke. And so I think it creates a slippery slope. And so we just say it's best to leave alone. Thank you.
Any further questions?
Sponsor, if that's okay. So, Mr. Chair, Senator Trevis, so you kind of heard there is definitions that would define, right? But you see, there's two different sections of code, as you heard, going on here. If you were creating a private club, the definition is there, but that's not what you're trying to do here. You're just trying to make it so the establishment has the fine and takes out the misdemeanor. Is that a fair assessment there?
So we're on the smoking section. is that right? Is that where we're at?
Yeah, so the end of the bill is...
And you know what? I didn't realize what I did actually was get rid of the written warning, so actually I did tighten up things a little bit in my view of this bill. I think that was kind of your line of questioning too, is, you know, we go straight to fines, which I guess I'm fine with. But I don't know if that's your question.
Okay, so but you'd be amenable though to an amendment to the penalties section that possibly fits more along with the current Montana Clean Air Act does versus what you're not trying to create private clubs for smoking. You're just trying to change.
That's not what that part does.
That's the penalties.
I mean, you can see it's purely just the fine structure.
Okay.
So.
Got it. Okay, and then Mr. Chair, follow up.
Can you?
Senator Trubis, so then under the bottle club portion, that portion you are just trying to create it so that it's a similar idea that you can just consume and store alcohol in a private club if you were a private club member, as long as it wasn't open to the public.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator, and actually to further define that, and I think this kind of goes back to Senator Dunwell's question in this sense, I also should have added the word similar to the Montana Indoor Clean Air Act, but apply it to this section. They can't have employees, they can't have sales, you know, all that stuff should be pretty clear. It's not about creating a bar without a license, so.
Okay, thank you, that's all I have, thanks.
Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, Senator, would you like to close on your bill?
Yes, I would, thank you. I just really have just a couple comments here, and I think we covered it really well. So I'll just say, you know, for those, I guess on the smoking part, it's just changing the fine structure, but I'm still going to respond to the part about, you know, owners passing this on to their kids, and that's why they don't want smoking in their establishments. They can still ban it. They're private property owners. They can allow what they want or don't allow what they want in their property. But again, it's still illegal. There's still a fine if you do allow it. And they'll still be, no matter what, still responsible for regulating what happens on their property when it comes to the Section 3 here. And I think on some of the education piece, if we don't have that many citations and fines, I think people know I think people know what they're supposed to do and not supposed to do. So if the education piece has worked, great. I don't think we need quite as much of a strong arm compliance and fines. And in fact, if I would have had this well a good of a vetting before I put this out to you guys, I probably would have put it in place at least one warning here. I think we could have kept that part, I suppose. But the bottle club part I covered, I think, you know, if we wanted to tighten it up so it says no employees and no sales, just to make sure that's absolutely clear and people bring their own, that would be fine too. I don't know how much time we have to do that, but I would be amenable to that. And then on the middle part, so there's in this bill, there's a little bit of liberty and a little bit of regulation. So the regulation really has to do with the synthetic cannabinoids and regulating those in a way to protect the public. And so that's my what I call my omnibus bill. So thank you for all of your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator. This now ends the hearing for Senate Bill 463. We will have executive action sometime this week, maybe next.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask a quick point of personal privilege? I know we said it was going to be no amendment Monday. I was just going to inquire how we could accomplish that if I was willing to work with Senator Treves on an amendment that I think would meet a lot of the needs of the opponents, and also in light of some of the bottle club language was in the governor's red tape work. And so if there was a way that we could sort of appease folks and continue to work together, I'd like to have an opportunity to work with Senator Treves on that, but I don't remember what the rules were about trying to draft that.
Senator Bowman, basically, if you can get that amendment in before Monday, okay, it should be fine. It's just the bills we'll hear on Monday. It's going to be a very, very problematic at best if you want to get them on. It would require you to bring lots and lots of City Brew or Starbucks gift cards to the staff. All right, committee. We will now open up the hearing for Senate Bill 358. Senator, would you like to open on your bill, sir?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair. Senator Greg Hertz, Senate District 6, out of Polson. Sorry for delayed. I was down in another committee. Mr. Chair, this bill, what it has to do with is disclosure requirements for local governments on lobbying contracts. Mr. Chair, if I had my way and my support, I would ban all lobbying money paid by taxpayer dollars. And I think that that's appropriate because I don't think taxpayer dollars should be used to fund lobbyists because, quite frankly, taxpayers all have a different need and different support for different areas. But, I mean, if you're in a private industry and you're hiring lobbyists, I mean, if I belong to a chamber of commerce, you know, I know what I'm lobbying for, but I don't think it really works well. So with that, I decided to back off on that bill because I'm sure I would have a ton of lobbyists standing up behind me in opposition. So what I brought today was disclosure. And so basically what this does, it requires lobbying disclosure. So if you look at new section one, so basically what it requires, if a local government is going to hire a lobbyist, then they need to disclose certain items to the public. And what those items are listed in new section one. So what they can do, the local government, and what they must do is display on their website the following information regarding contract for services. So they need to supply the contract date, of course, the duration of the contract, effective date, total amount of money the local government has paid in the previous year, identify the parties of the contract, list the legislation that they advocated for and against, by parties and subcontractors, including positions they took on the legislation. So in lieu of that information, they may just post the contract on their website, but they still need to provide the information in subsection 1G. Quite frankly, this information is probably available if you wanted to go down to your local government, dig through their records, look at all their disbursements. You could probably find that information, but it'd take you a while. So then it goes on in Section 4, if the local government doesn't maintain a website, which I think most of them do, the local government shall just provide public notice that, hey, we had a contract for lobbying services, and it's available if you want to come down to our office to inspect that. And then I went a little bit further during legislative sessions. At least once a month while the legislature is meeting during the regular session, A local government shall provide a report providing information, which was under 1G, that includes, and they include that on their agenda at their regular scheduled meeting of the local government. So basically, while we're here from January to April, local governments all meet monthly. If they're having a monthly meeting, they just need to say, hey, on our agenda this week, we have our lobbying report. We're going to basically provide the citizens. Here's what we paid our lobbyists. Here's what they're lobbying for and against. I think that just provides taxpayers information that they can do out there. So there's one, there's a couple of there's associations that I have exempted. So we know there's associations out there that do many other things for local governments, including, I mean, obviously, MACO, League of Cities. Those are dues-driven, and I think those individuals, they're excluded from this, mainly because they do so many other things for their organizations, although they are up here. We have one in the room right now. I will bring an amendment, though, for those local governments that basically say if entities are making donations or contributions above and beyond their normal dues, and if those local associations are using those money for lobbyists, then that money will be subject to any reporting requirements. And I think that's only fair. I mean, if they're out there soliciting dollars for additional lobbying activities above what they normally do, then it needs to be reported. So this isn't something new. I mean, Texas has had this disclosure going on for several years. I looked up on a couple cities down there, and they had just posted it up. Here's our lobbying information, what we had done during the last period of time. And it just provided the public with a lot more information. Also, Texas did a little survey, I think it was last spring, on their, I think it was their primary ballot, and over 90% of the people in that basically said, yeah, we want to know what our local governments are doing when they're lobbying other governments, and then they should. So, Mr. Chair, I think this is a great bill for disclosure to the public what's going on out there. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now open up testimony on Senate Bill 358. Any proponents in the room or in the hallway for Senate Bill 358? Seeing none, Senator or Mr. Campbell, do you have any online?
Mr. Chair, we do not.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Do we have any opponents online?
We do not, Mr. Chair.
Do we have any informational witnesses online?
We do not, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I will go to opposition of Senate Bill 358 in the room or in the hallway. Is there any opposition to 358? Seeing none, are there any informational witnesses on Senate Bill 358, informational witnesses? Seeing none, committee, questions?
Thanks a lot, Mr. Senator Chair, Boldman. For the sponsor. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Boldman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Hertz. So I think this is a great bill, and can I ask three questions? Because I know that your brain can handle it. You said that there's a lot of lobbyists paid for by taxpayer dollars. I didn't know that, so will you share? Also, do you have an objection to including the judicial branch in this? And then the third thing was, I'm also would like to know the process by which our local governments and our judicial branch, what process are in place to make the decisions on whether they support or oppose legislation. You know, is that something that you would be also, that think should be disclosed?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Boldman, in regards to adding the judiciary, I don't really see I don't really have opposition to that. In regards to the dollars, I haven't looked up or tracked and see what type of dollars that are going into that, but I think you can kind of just tell what's going on up here from when we see lobbyists from cities across the state, some county lobbyists, so we know it's being spent. The I don't have any numbers for Montana. The numbers out of Texas were, you know, in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Uh-huh. I was just shocked at the amount of money that's being spent on lobbyists down there. So I suspect it's a significant amount of money up here, too. And your third question was?
Well, so this says that, you know, that they should disclose their activities related to lobbying. And I just thought that one thing that I've always been curious is the process by which a government, you know, municipality or county has to decide what bills they'll support or oppose or stay out of, whether it's just the mayor, whether it's they incorporate the whole council, their agencies, you know.
So Mr. Chair, Senator Bowman, so I think that's where this gets to the, you know, when local governments are going to be required to disclose, particularly during the legislative session, and it's going to be noted on the agenda, and they're going to come up and they're going to give a report about why they're supporting right. or opposing something. That gives the public then to come in and say, hey, I don't agree with your opposition to this particular bill, this particular topic. That's not in the best interest of the, right. of the citizens of this community. So I think that's where I think then local governments may become more responsive as to their citizens when their citizens speak up and express their concerns about lobbying.
No further questions from the committee? Seeing none, Senator Hertz, would you like to close?
Yes, thank you for the excellent hearing. And I will look at adding the amendment that I had talked about and looking at the ability to add in the judicial branch. I'll work with the drafter on the bill, but as you guys know, it's taken a while to get amendments out. So I would encourage, if you just wanted to pass it along the way it is now, we can possibly look at amending it on the floor or clean it up over in the House. So looks like a great bill. No opposition. I didn't expect any lobbyists up here opposing me. So Cressa do pass. Thank you.
Thank you. This ends the hearing on Senate Bill 358. Where are we? Senate. We can now go to Senate Bill 467, since the sponsor is in the room. This will open the hearing on Senate Bill 467. Senator Trebus, please open on your bill.
Sick of me yet? Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm Jeremy Trebus from Great Falls, Senator, Senate District 13. I have Senate Bill 467, which is an act generally revising laws regarding local regulation of short-term rentals. It prohibits county or municipal planning entities from adopting or enforcing regulations that would prohibit or restrict rental periods for short-term rentals and prohibit a local government unit from prohibiting short-term rentals of residential properties. So we continue our theme of adjusting local control in this committee. Section 1 has to do with county planning and zoning commission may not adopt or enforce any regulation, restriction, or resolution or ordinance that would prohibit short-term rentals. Section 2, a board of county commissioners may not do that either. And Section 3 defines a short-term rental as a residential use. And on page 2, line 1, part 2, a city or town council or other legislative body of a municipality may not adopt or enforce any regulation, restriction, resolution, or ordinance that would prohibit short-term rentals, and so on and so forth. On line 5 in part 3, as used in the section, short-term rental has a meaning provided for in 15-68-101. And what that definition is in MCA 15-68-101, in 1A is accommodations, and in 1B is accommodations including a home or a room rented by an owner. And so if you look that up and you want more definition about what that is, just take a look there. Powers denied section 7-1-111, kind of the preemption area of our law on page 4, line 21, part 26. It says any power to prohibit short-term rentals as defined in 15-68-101 of residential property or accommodations is then we prohibit the prohibition on short-term rentals. So that's the idea, and I will sit down. You'll get to hear proponents and opponents. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there proponents for Senate Bill 467?
My name is Brian Wells, and I am from Park County, Montana. Thank you.
Can you please spell your last name for the record?
W-E-L-L-S.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, members of the Local Government Committee. Thank you for your service to the great state of Montana and allowing me to testify today. I fully support SB 467 and thank you, Senator Tribos, for your work on this important legislation. Our community is dependent on Yellowstone tourism and outdoor recreation. Park County and Paradise Valley are among the most beautiful places on earth. The BN Railroad left in the 80s, the sawmills and mining has left the area. The community and nonprofit special interest groups reject most all heavy industrial proposals. Folks have had to figure out a way to make a living here. Tourism and outdoor recreation plays a huge part in creating opportunity for survival in our area. I had a neighbor lady who suddenly became a widow, lost her income, was going to lose her home, and she had a cabin on her property, and she called me and asked me if I thought she could put that on a vacation rental site and maybe save her place. So I helped her jump through the hoops, and she was able to keep her home, so that was pretty cool. Short-term rentals have improved the quality of life for a lot of folks that live in our area. Many elderly people have turned their walkout basements or part of their house into short-term rentals to supplement their meager Social Security income. So it's been wonderful that way. My wife and I were self-employed most of our life. We built our four rental cabins with our own hands so we could have a retirement income. But that has also made it possible for us to have four long-term low-income rentals. So we were able to create some low-income rentals because of the money that we made off our short-term rentals. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Further proponents? And I neglected to mention this earlier, but we'll do a couple minutes per person. So try to keep everything to about a minute and a half or so.
Okay, thank you. I'm Teresa Harkins from Prey, Montana, Park County. Harkins, H-A-R-K-I-N-S. And I'm very happy to support SB 467 because it protects our personal property rights. Some of my experiences have been, I've been involved in listening to our county commissioner's housing action plan, and in their housing action plan have randomly selected SDRs or short-term rentals as to be taxed or regulated because of the supposition that they're affecting the long-term rental market. And I see no correlation between the two, especially out in the county. And as Brian said, we live in a sensitive area, and our short-term rentals are seasonal and low impact on the environment because they're only going about 3 months out of the year. A lot of the short-term rentals are run by folks like my husband and I, and we personally mow the lawn, personally make sure that the hosts, not the hosts, but the guests are having a great time and learn about our area. So how can those people love our area more than seeing it from an owner's point of view? So I love that part of it. One of the only forms of income our residents have are short-term rentals. I have a friend whose Social Security check is under $300, and she's a single woman. The only way that she can keep it going is that she has seasonal rental cabins high in the mountains, so when the snow leaves in July, she can rent for 2 or 3 months, and that helps supplement her income. So regulating the short-term rentals, I think, is harmful to the residents and infringes upon their ability to make a living in Montana. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Henry Kriegel. That's K-R-I-E-G-E-L, and I'm with Americans for Prosperity. We will consistently side with property rights as it is a fundamental constitutional right. And leveraging property rights allows individuals to pursue a life of prosperity and the American dream. And you've heard just now a couple of personal testimonials of how people have used their property in a creative, innovative way to supplement their income and be able to sustain themselves here in Montana, and particularly in areas that are difficult otherwise. This bill protects these fundamental rights. You might hear from opponents that restricting or regulating these short-term rentals will help satisfy the need for more affordable and attainable housing in Montana. I think that'll be a very short-term and unsustainable solution. Again, the trade-off of infringement of property rights is too high. And in addition, there are a number of housing and zoning reform bills that are making its way, hopefully, through the Senate and onto the Senate floor that members of this committee can vote for, that will help satisfy the need for affordable and attainable housing for Montanans throughout the state. So for these reasons, we stand in support of this bill.
Thank you. Are there further proponents?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Sam Sill. That's S-I-L-L here on behalf of the Montana Association of Realtors. It is growing to be late in the day, and I think you heard some very compelling testimony from a couple of folks who have firsthand experience with short-term rentals, so I'm going to be very brief. We're of course, in support of short-term rentals and minimizing regulation of short-term rentals at the local level. Certainly, short-term rentals provide people an opportunity for an additional source of income, which is important in these inflationary times. And we shouldn't forget the impact that tourism dollars have in our resort communities and even other communities around the state. And short-term rentals are part and parcel. That's why we're going to ask you to vote yes. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there further proponents?
Good afternoon, committee. Dan Skatum, S-K-A-T-T-U-M. I would encourage you to support private property rights. I'll just give a couple of instances that happened in our local area. We had one person that wanted to build some duplexes at levels that he could rent them out as lower income, and our city denied that. Another instance, a person wanted to build some fourplexes. The city planner was in favor of it, and the city voted and said no. Please protect our private property rights. Thank you.
Thank you, former representative. It's always good to see you back in the building. Are there further proponents? Further proponents? Mr. Campbell, do we have any proponents online?
Mr. Vice Chair, we do. We have Leslie Everett. Go ahead, Leslie.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Senators. Thanks for the opportunity to provide comments as a proponent of SB 467. My name is Leslie Everett, E-V-E-R-E-T-T. I'm an immigrant in Park County, Montana, and I value my personal property rights, including the right to occasionally rent my home on a short-term basis. I believe that fundamental to our property rights is for a landowner to be able to determine what the appropriate term of tenancy is that suits their needs. Renting on a short-term basis has allowed my husband and I the opportunity to reinvest in our property, supplement our income, and save for retirement. Many short-term rental hosts in Park County are local individual landowners that not only provide an excellent and sustainable lodging experience to our guests, but also help support a variety of small businesses in our community and contribute significantly to our local economy. Please vote yes on SB 467. This is an important bill that protects our private property rights, supports an important source of income for many local landowners in Park County and throughout the state of Montana. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further proponents online?
Mr. Vice Chair, there is none.
Okay, we will move on to opponents. Are there any opponents in the room?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Stuart Doggett, D-O-G-G-E-T-T, here today on behalf of the Montana Lodging and Hospitality Association. We oppose this bill because we think Senate Bill 268, which, as I listen to the proponents, I think would satisfy and allow them to do what they've described, I think, is a better solution. This bill to us is takes us down the road of Arizona, and I'll have a handout which describes that, which that state ended up presenting, and the Republican legislature and the Republican governor ended up reversing that situation. You know, we support the rights of property owners to occasionally rent their homes to earn extra income. And again, that if you take a look at Senate Bill 268 and some of the amendments are still a work in progress, we think that's achieved. But we share the concerns that local residents have expressed about the growing number of commercial operators, not like these folks, the commercial operators who are using sites like Airbnb to run multi-unit full-time lodging businesses without any oversight right in the middle of residential neighborhoods. If you need any proof of our concerns, this has come to fruition. I'd ask you to look at what happened in Arizona in 2016. A similar bill to this that restricted local control of short-term renters led to the proliferation of LLCs buying properties in residential communities, including some towns where more than 30% of single-family homes became short-term rentals. In 2022, the same Republican-led legislature and governor passed a bill to undo the 2016 law. And, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I have a handout that describes that situation. And I also have a handout from the American Hotel and Lodging Association that would also like to go on record in opposition to that. But they weren't able to sign in to oppose on time. So thank you.
Yes, if you have copies enough for everyone, please hand them to Senator Boldman, and we'll send them around. Are there further opponents to Senate Bill 467?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Alley, A-L-L-E-Y. I'm Associate General Counsel for the Montana Association of Counties. MACO rises in opposition to this, to Senate Bill 467 for a couple of reasons. Number one, this creates short-term rentals by right in all zoning districts. So as I listen to the proponents, I think there might be some confusion on what this bill actually affects. So Section 1 of the bill is Part 1 zoning districts. Those are citizen-initiated zoning districts. Section 2 of the bill affects county-initiated zoning districts. Section 3 of the bill affects municipal-created zoning districts. That's the only part. Those are the only entities that are affected. Those are the only places where I think this bill is trying to regulate short-term rentals. So with regard to Section 1, or Part 1 zoning specifically, which is Section 1 of the bill, Part 1 zoning districts, as I mentioned, are citizen-initiated. They're created upon petition before the Board of County Commissioners. So from MACO's perspective, it is problematic to require short-term rentals by right in zoning districts created at the request of citizens. Additionally, during your executive action earlier today, this committee did pass Senate Bill 268. It was amended with amendments that, when MACO had testified on that bill earlier this week, addressed MACO's concerns. That bill creates defined short-term residential rentals as a residential use, but also gives local governing bodies some control through a public process to prohibit short-term rentals in a particular zoning district. So it's MACO's perspective that that bill provides a better process and a better solution for this issue. And additionally, I would say that, you know, again, it comes down to each locality, each local governing body is in a better situation to be able to assess where short-term rentals are more appropriate, how to incorporate those into residential areas within existing zoning districts. What occurs in Gardner is not necessarily the same as Missoula, is not necessarily the same as Roundup. I would also say that Ms. Lynch, the executive director of the League, asked me to also indicate that the League opposes this bill for the reasons MACO has stated. So with that, thank you.
Thank you. Are there further opponents to Senate Bill 467? Opponents. Mr. Campbell, do we have any opponents online?
Mr. Vice Chair, we do. First, we have Terry Cunningham. Go ahead, Terry.
Good evening, Chair and committee members. My name is Terry Cunningham, C-U-N-N-I-N-G-H-A-M. I'm the Deputy Mayor of Bozeman and speaking on behalf of the Bozeman City Commission. Like many fast-growing Montana cities, Bozeman is experiencing a housing shortage for our workforce, And part of the reason for that shortfall is that housing units that should be accommodating long-term renters are becoming short-term accommodations for tourists. We've seen an alarming increase in short-term rentals among new construction projects. And while these units may be more profitable for institutional investors and commercial operators, they are not adding to the housing supply for our residents. I believe that this bill will negate the work of the governor's Affordable Housing Task Force, whose goal is to create more affordable housing, not less. And make no mistake, this bill will have a negative impact on workforce housing in our community because it expands where short-term rentals can be located and it hinders our ability to regulate this issue locally. The Bozeman City Commission firmly believes that the government closest to the people is best suited to govern the people. Local governments are positioned to address the concerns of local community members in a timely fashion, and this bill infringes upon the self-governing powers we were afforded in the state constitution. A vote against this bill is a vote in favor of hardworking Montanans that fuel our economy and our community. I urge a no vote on this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further opponents online?
Mr. Vice Chair, there is. Next, we have Izzy Milch. Go ahead, Izzy.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Izzy Milch, spelled M-I-L-C-H. I am here on behalf of Forward Montana to ask you to oppose SB 467. To solve our housing crisis, local governments need these tools. Regulating or prohibiting short-term rentals should be one tool that local governments have access to help ensure that certain neighborhoods are actually filled with residents who live in the community. Regulations on short-term rentals help protect the character of a neighborhood and create more sustainable housing options for residents living and working in that community. Some folks have been pushed out of housing because the owner wants to turn the place into a short-term rental. I know handfuls of these friends in Missoula. Even if it's temporary, this displaces residents and forces them to find housing that is in short supply. The purchasing of new homes for the purpose of creating short-term rentals, as the previous opponent mentioned, also reduces the supply of housing, further contributing to our housing crisis. I know this committee has heard plenty of great legislation this session that could really move the needle on our state's housing crisis, and this bill could undo a lot of that really great work. So we ask that you vote no on SB 467, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there further opponents online?
Mr. Vice Chair, there is none.
Okay, we will go to informational witnesses. Are there informational witnesses in the room or in the hallway? Informational witnesses? Seeing none, Mr. Campbell, are there informational witnesses online?
Mr. Vice Chair, there is none.
Okay, seeing none, we will go to questions from the committee. Any questions? Senator Pope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Mayor Cunningham, please.
Mr. Cunningham, are you still online?
I am, Mr. Chair, Senator Pope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Cunningham. Could you explain a little bit more detail about some of the things that Bozeman faces in terms of, as you said, the commitment to addressing housing and what the challenges are for a self-governing power are in that respect?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pope, we have a very few tools in our toolbox versus other cities and other states. We continue to have those tools reduced in our toolbox. And so as a result, we try to put incentives in place. We have an affordable housing action plan. Many of the governor's task force recommendations have already been done here in Bozeman. I would like to second what we heard from the Hotelier Association. We are starting to see major developments that sections of that development are absolutely being attributed to short-term rentals. So, you know, three, four-story buildings all going to short-term rentals because it provides more return on investment, et cetera. So when we're seeing major developments that should be adding to inventory to address the supply and demand mismatch, a significant portion of that is going towards a type of home that does not benefit our residents, does not add to supply, et cetera. Mr. Chair, Senator Pope, I hope that answers your question.
Does a follow-up?
Senator Pope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Mayor, would you mind sharing with us your sense about the the importance of public process in trying to come up with local solutions to housing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pope, one of the things that we do in Bozeman City Commission is have transparent hearings that are publicly noticed, that are open to the public, that are well publicized, where everyone gets 3+ minutes, where we have comments that are distributed to every commissioner, where the press is there looking over our shoulder, where we are accountable to our citizens, where special interest groups are welcome to present their ideas, all going towards a solution that we believe is best for the community and represents the best interests of the community, especially long-term interests. So we believe it's a transparent process. We believe it's an inclusive process. And we believe it's a process that if they don't like what we're doing, we get voted out. And so we believe in government works best when it's most accountable to the citizens. Mr. Chair, Senator Pope, I hope that's what you were getting at.
Thank you very much. Yes, it was. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Are there further questions from the committee? Senator Boldman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have a couple questions. First is to the, is that the Mayor of Bozeman?
Deputy Mayor.
Deputy Mayor Cunningham. Thank you.
For Mr.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Chair. Deputy Mayor Cunningham. So I know you can't see us, but I actually served on the Governor's Housing Task Force, and I know you referenced a sense that perhaps short-term rentals were contributing to the housing crisis. We heard quite a bit of information statewide that there wasn't any information that verified that. And so I was just trying to kind of garner where you were getting that information, that that's sort of a fact.
Chair, Senator, we are hearing from the mouths of citizens. We're hearing from the mouths of citizens who are being, their leases are being terminated, and they're looking to find, forced to find others. Also, we are looking at recent developments and noticing that large swaths of recent developments of multifamily households, of townhomes, of condos are not being presented to the public in terms of rental, that they are being saved by, served by institutional investors and commercial operators, where these never get into the public hands. It is a much different situation than I think some of the testimony that we are hearing. It is not a single room in a home that is being rented out to deal with property tax issues. It is a total investment strategy that maximizes every single penny of every development for maximum profit. That is what we're seeing. And that is sort of the evidence here on the ground. I hope that answers your question, Mr. Chairman, Senator.
Just quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boldin.
How would this bill affect that latter portion of your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. What we are seeking to do is have a community conversation about this really complex subject to evaluate various options, whether it's affirmative obligations on behalf of the property owner to be registered with the VRBO, whether it's looking at rates, whether it's looking at type 3 rentals versus type 2 versus type 1. There's a whole host of things that we would like to be considering and getting our citizens involved in that process. And so we are not saying today that we are in favor of banning anything. What we're doing is saying we would like to have a holistic look at this subject and be able to craft a community solution that's right for Bozeman. I hope that answers your question, Mr. Chairman and Senator.
Yeah, thank you. Just one more quick follow-up.
Senator Bolden?
So I guess this is fine to the deputy mayor. Sorry to just put you on the spot. So my understanding is that this bill would just prohibit local governments from the short-term rental is less than 30 days. And so I'm not sure, Deputy Mayor, if you're aware that there are now businesses in our state that are banning, for example, the KOA in Missoula. There's now various hotels that are not allowing less than 30-day stays to homeless populations. And so there's quite a few states now that have not allowed communities to do that. It does sort of leave churches or and other nonprofits that provide vouchers for those limited stays without a place for some folks, including families, to go. So are you saying that that's you want to be able to have those community decisions to allow businesses to do that? Or what would be, I guess, the objection?
Mr. Chair and Senator, what we are looking to do is just have the opportunity to have those discussions locally, fully appreciating the fact that a short-term rental is 28 days or less. That is certainly the subject that we would have our hearings around. We would love to hear whether it's churches, whether it's businesses, whoever is being affected by this, whatever information can be brought to bear. We just want to be able to gather that information, have a full and complete hearing, look at all of the possibilities, whether it's fees, whether it's caps, whether it's percentages, et cetera. We are not proposing a ban on anything at the moment. What we are doing is we're in the middle of an investigation phase right now. It's been identified by our city commission as a priority, and we're getting community input, just like the old town halls where folks of different stripes and different organizations, different who represent different points of view, get their say, and we have the ability to craft local solutions to address that. I hope that answers the question, Mr. Chair and Senator.
Thank you. I guess this is my very final one, just because
Senator Bolden,
that's kind of representing the opposition right now. So, Deputy Mayor, we heard a bill a little earlier today that was about local control versus state control when it came to, for example, smoking and the Indoor Clearing Air Act or the Department of Revenue's regulation of alcohol. And so is that something that you also feel should sort of stay at the local level and that you should, that, you know, that the localities should also regulate that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. We recognize that the fastest growing part of the Montana Code annotated is the powers denied section. And this legislative session alone, we are seeing the self-governing powers that we believe are codified in the state constitution. And I've got the books that talk about the original intent. We are seeing those being eroded session by session, bill by bill, day by day. So yes, we believe that decisions are best made locally, that overreach by the state legislature undermines the notion of local control. And quite frankly, I think it is contrary to the spirit of America.
Thank you. Are there further questions from the committee, Senator Bogner?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for Mr. Cunningham. Mr. Cunningham, I was trying to, I guess, better understand the landscape of these short-term rentals across the state. So I hope you have this data in front of you, but do you know how many short-term rentals there are in the city of Bozeman currently?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. We believe that there are over 900 current short-term rentals that are operating. We are under the impression, based on our interviews with focus groups of short-term rental operators, that that may be a low number. We do require fire inspections. We inquire them to be licensed, et cetera. but we are under the impression based on VRBO and Airbnb that there are many more being listed than there are being licensed. I hope that answers the question, Mr. Chair and Senator.
It does, Mr. Cunningham. Can I have a follow-up?
Senator Bogner.
Okay. Mr. Cunningham, do you know what percentage that is of the total rentals in the city?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Wagner. We believe that it is under 5% currently. We believe that that figure is changing rapidly, as was the testimony of the person from the Hotel Association. We are seeing entire buildings in new developments being allocated to short-term rentals. We think this number is could be exponentially growing in the next 5 years, Mr. Chair and Senator.
And then one final
follow-up. Senator Bogner.
One more question, Mr. Cunningham. I thank you for this data you have. But you mentioned hotels. Do you know how many hotel rooms there are in the city and what percentage that they are full?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I do not have that information. We do see additional hotels being constructed. We see permits for additional hotels. We recognize that Bozeman is a very desirable destination, and we are short on a number of accommodations, including hotel rooms.
Thank you, Mr. Cunningham. Appreciate that.
Yeah. There, Senator Dunwell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor, please.
Senator Treves.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Treves. I know it's getting late, and this is probably getting hard on you. This is not to beat up on you.
No, it's all good. Thank
at
you
all.
For the questions.
I feel your pain, right? Yeah. So this discussion points out to me that I think we need different categories of short-term rentals. You know, the kind that the deputy mayor explained, these companies are buying up what probably should be a hotel type building and calling them short-term rentals. And then we have the very compelling situation of Mr. Wells and Ms. Harkins from Park County, that tourism is their only employer now, and you know, the story of the one woman who was able to save her property because she could rent out a cabin. I mean, would you be willing to confine this bill to short-term rentals of the types that Ms. Harkins and Mr. Wells described?
Interesting thought, Mr. Chair, Senator. Well, I'm a little scrambled in my brains right now, so I'm not going to try to, but I get what you're trying to say, and, you know, that might be kind of a discussion of number of units, maybe on a single property discussion, and I guess that's my first thought, so so I think that's where you might be going with that, and that might be something to think about, I suppose.
Senator Dunwell, is there a follow-up?
Just to follow up, thank you. And yeah, can you give us more time by any chance? I know I had to make that a question.
Mr. Chair, Senator, well, the deadlines aren't I didn't make them up. So
yeah, right.
We'll do what we can,
okay,
I suppose.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Senator Treves. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? I have a question for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Treves, I know you're on this committee, so you heard Senate Bill 268 as well. I'm wondering, there was a lot of talk about how this bill interfaces with the issue that was presented in Senate Bill 268. Can you talk a little bit about how these bills interact? Is your bill still necessary if the other bill passes? Will coordination language be necessary if these move together?
Good question, Mr. Chair. I'm a little foggy on maybe how they would fit together. I guess I'd make a pitch for this bill to say that I think we definitely need to have a strong prohibition on the prohibition of these rentals. But as far as how it might fit in with the other bill, I would have to look at the other bill a little closely and do a little reconciliation. again.
Okay, thank you. And then I have a question for Deputy Mayor Cunningham.
Yes, here, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Cunningham. I believe in your responses to Senator Boldman earlier. You had mentioned one of the concerns was that you'd have a residential development which would immediately go on the short-term rental market in order to chase higher profits. Is that, did I hear that correctly?
Senator, yes. In this case, the one I'm referring to, although there are many, there are several buildings in the development. One of those buildings would be solely allocated to short-term rentals, and it would be a 3-to-4-story building.
Okay, Mr. Cunningham, is it the general policy of Bozeman to want to ensure that people do not maximize their profit on their private developments?
Certainly, we do not set rates. We do not set prices, et cetera. What we do have is a community and workforce calling out for additional housing. We have a governor's task force calling out for additional housing for residents who are fleeing because they can no longer afford to live here. And so we believe that that if a developer is going to be in a community, they have certain obligations to the community from which they're doing business. And one of those might be to add to the inventory of for our workforce.
So Deputy Mayor Cunningham, are you saying that a developer in Bozeman has an obligation to not maximize their profit?
Mr. Chair, absolutely not saying that. As mentioned, we cannot have a developer go for a particular price point. We are not saying that a developer has to meet affordable housing needs. We do have incentives that we have passed. We have, it's now part of our code that encourages developers and gives them incentives in terms of height restrictions, parking restrictions, it's things like that, that provide incentives for doing that. We are not saying that a developer has no right to or does not have every right to maximize their return. However, we are represent the community, and the community has a crisis. It's on fire. It's flashing red. It's alarm bells. Any other way that you can describe it is what it is. And we believe that providing additional residential units is the best thing that can be done for our community. Hope that answers your question, sir.
Okay, yes, thank you. Seeing no further questions, Senator Treibus, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I would absolutely love to close on my bill. Offer a couple of solutions that aren't realistic, but here's a couple of solutions. Let's do a forced conversion of hotel rooms to long-term housing. That might solve some issues. And ban people from moving to these desirable places and limit tourists. I mean, that would be a nice little hammer we could do to solve all our problems in a day, right? But that's not realistic. So what do we got to do? We got to look in the middle here. I kind of had the idea, the short-term rentals before they really kind of blew up and became a thing, as I was working at a hotel in Bozeman for 3 years, actually, because you'd see the rates continue to rise. And I don't want to make this about, you know, us versus them. And that's kind of, I thought about this a lot. And so I lived there and I worked at a hotel or in the hospitality industry. But I thought, you know, if people could rent their extra rooms, they could afford their places, whether that's seniors or people starting out. I think it allows for the affordability of maybe purchasing a larger property for people starting out. You know, I've had a couple long-term rentals that I've owned. One was in the basement of my house for 17 years. And without that, some months I wouldn't have been able to pay my mortgage. So that was long-term. But the way it fits here is, you know, really... I've had some long-term nightmare tenants, which I expected more people to talk about, you know, maybe the short-term problems in a neighborhood. But, you know, bad apples will be weeded out, whether it's short-term or long-term. And with these short-term rentals, it's nice that more of a hotel law type applies because you can boot people out easier. It doesn't, you don't get into the Landlord-Tenant Act. So if you have problems, you can solve them more quickly. We do have a lot of work to do in the housing sphere. We have that in other bills that we've heard in this committee. You heard that referenced by, I think, the person from Ford, Montana, to solve the opponent's housing supply concerns. You know, I had a condo in Bozeman, and I sold it because of the rising costs, and so I got out of there. Did that create extra housing? No. Just flipped it from me to someone else, right? So Bozeman's got its own problem. It's growing. Whether or not short-term rentals are allowed, I think they're really part of the solution when it comes to local property owners especially. You know, we can talk about the bigger issues if it really is happening where we're having large, you know, corporations come in and buy up all the housing stock and that reduces the supply and so we're getting farther from meeting demand. Maybe. I've heard that talking point. But I think really this is more about individual liberty, especially with property rights. I think that's really the economic tide that raises all boats. And I think it's more true than not in this case. And I think as the chair got to here, I think real estate is about the highest and best use of property. And so when you start restricting how you can use your property, it kind of defeats the purpose of having real estate and investing in it. So I think that's kind of where I'll close, but I think those are the big issues, big topics we should consider when we consider this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on Senate Bill 467. Next bill on the agenda is Senate Bill 376. I see the sponsor is in the room. We'll open the hearing on Senate Bill 376. Senator Bogner.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Ken Bogner. I represent Senate District 19, which includes my hometown of Miles City. Before you today is Senate Bill 376. Does essentially three things. Looking at Section 1, it states that a covenant on residential property may not prohibit the occupancy or rental of accessory dwelling units, and they may not prohibit the provision of child care. Then in this Section 2, it addresses what are referred to as zombie covenants, covenants that remain but aren't enforced, and this prevents enforcement of those covenants long after their initial adoption. Before we get into this and go to proponents and opponents, I had a few emails after introduction that raised some concerns. I am open to an amendment. I have them drawn up. I know I will stick to the bill. I know that these haven't been submitted yet because I had got these before timing issue, and I may have more, so I didn't want to have staff work on these if they will change a little, but I will pass them out, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please.
But the amendments of the bill that you have seen mostly address the recording date, or that there is a recording requirement that the new Section 2, Subsection 5 states that prevents an owner from claiming the benefits of the grandfathering protections in 7017-901 based on expired covenants. And then finally in Section 4,
adds a little amendment that the covenants adopted or amended on or after the effective date are subject to the bill. Happy to answer any questions and look forward to a good hearing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We're going to do about a minute and a half per person, so be efficient both for proponents and opponents. We will start with proponents. Are there proponents for Senate Bill 376?
Chairman, members of the committee, Sam Forstag, F-O-R-S-T-A-G, here on behalf of the City of Bozeman. This bill, we stand in support of this bill. This is something we've been working on for many months. We thank the sponsor for his patience, and we respect, you know, much of the opposition you'll be seeing. I don't think there's any version of this bill that wouldn't have some opposition from folks who work with the homeowners associations that this may affect. What I'd like to make clear is that our intent here is that this bill addresses one component of two crises that we're facing in Bozeman and across Montana: a lack of affordable housing and a lack of affordable child care. The housing crisis and the child care crisis are complex, multifaceted issues, and we have in this bill a win-win. This bill will help enable Montanans to play a part in solving part of both of these crises, ensuring they have the choice of providing residential child care for their neighbors in their own home, and investing in the construction of new housing in the form of ADUs on their own property. Something this bill does not do is reach back into already existing covenants or HOA agreements. We sought to specify this in Section 4, the applicability date here. That is another conversation for another bill. This bill will simply make sure that HOAs or residential covenants that are formed or amended in the future are not making these problems worse. I'll repeat, this does not apply to already existing covenant provisions. And for those covenants or provisions that are created in the future, Section 2 makes sure that all members have the opportunity to reaffirm their support on a regularly occurring five-year basis. This bill will help with the two pressing issues that our communities are facing, and that our cities can, to make sure that our cities can plan for growth and infill without being hampered by covenants that don't have a means of dissolution. I appreciate your time and consideration, and I stand for questioning. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further proponents?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Robin Turner, and my name is spelled R-O-B-I-N-T-U-R-N-E-R, and I am here on behalf of the Women's Foundation of Montana. We're here to support SB 376. Tell you a little bit about our organization, since I think this is my first time in front of this committee. The Women's Foundation supports women and girls in Montana through strategic grant making, policy change advocacy, and other initiatives related to that. Our grantees and donors work and live in communities all across Montana. Women are the sole breadwinners in over 60% of Montana households. We believe when we invest in access to livable wages, affordable child care, health care, equal pay, education and job training, stronger families, communities, and economies result. A little information about Montana. A November 2020 Montana Department of Labor report indicated that most businesses in Montana indicated a shortage of affordable child care options in their community, and that increasing access should be a priority. Approximately 40% of businesses said the shortage was impacting their ability to recruit or retain qualified workers, and the impact was higher for businesses with non-traditional hours. There's another report from September 2021 from the Washington Center for Equitable Growth. Insufficient childcare options can prevent parents who wish to work from doing so, with mothers often bearing the brunt of this challenge. Among parents who wish to work, child rearing tends to interfere more with women's labor supply and employment outcomes than men's. Dependable and affordable daycare and after school care options keep parents in the workforce, which can benefit employers. Mothers in low wage jobs often find that 19% stopped. From a study I also had, 19% stopped working entirely in the same quarter in which they experienced a disruption to their child care arrangements, compared to only 9% who did not experience such a disruption. So this bill will provide access to additional options to provide safe, affordable, and essential child care in our communities. So for those reasons, we support this bill. Mr. Chair, may I be excused? I am actually in the middle of another committee on the third floor.
Are there any questions for Ms. Turner? Senator Boldman?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Turner, would you have any objection to this becoming retroactive, or?
I think that, sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, I think that it's important to listen to the proponents and the opponents about the concerns around the retroactivity when we make a decision. Thank you.
Any further questions? All right, Ms. Turner, you may be excused.
Thank you.
Are there further proponents for Senate Bill 376?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N, and I'm the Executive Director of Zero to Five Montana. And with your permission, I have a handout. If it's okay.
Please send it to Senator Boldman and we'll get it around.
Great. So a little bit about Zero to Five. We're a nonpartisan organization dedicated to increasing access to quality early care and education across the state. Our work focuses on engaging with community partners to solve early childhood issues. And we're also implementing several childcare business supports to expand childcare capacity all across the state. I'm here today to express our support for Senate Bill 376 and appreciate the sponsor for bringing this bill forward. By ensuring childcare can operate in neighborhoods with residential covenants, more childcare options will be available to families in and near their own homes. We know how important it is for parents to have access to quality, convenient, and affordable childcare, and inadequate access to childcare is a barrier for many parents to be able to participate in the workforce. While businesses struggle to recruit and retain employees, parents often cannot find reliable care for their young ones, resulting in missed days at work and increased stress. Home-based care has been on the decline in many years, and it's critical in rural and tribal areas that may lack access to licensed childcare centers. Last fall, our organization supported a poll among registered voters, and we found that 89% of respondents agree that when working parents don't have access to childcare, it impacts the economy. We know that a lack of available and quality childcare in Montana has prevented many parents from fully participating in the workforce and the labor force. The handout speaks of this, and it pulls quite a few data points from the Department of Labor and Industry. We know that this further exacerbates the state's workforce shortage. As cited earlier, 40% of businesses have reported that they're unable to find and return a qualified workforce because of the lack of childcare. This bill will create more options for home-based childcare businesses to operate and helps to address the dire childcare challenges parents are facing in the state. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We request a due pass on this bill.
Thank you. Are there further proponents for Senate Bill 376?
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ella Smith, that's S-M-I-T-H, and I'm here today on behalf of the Montana Advocates for Children. We rise in support of Senate Bill 376 and thank Senator Bogner for his work on this. I'm going to skip a few things that have already been stated. According to the Economic Policy Institute, the average annual cost of infant care in Montana is $9,518, which pencils out to $793 a month. The latest data from Kids Count Data Center states that the availability from regulated child care meets only half the estimated demand for children with working parents, which translates to a gap of about 20,000 more child care slots needed. Child care availability is even harder to find, as was previously stated, in rural and tribal communities. Five rural counties lack a single regulated provider, and 60% of Montana counties are considered child care deserts, where less than one-third of demand is being met by licensed care. Child care availability is also much more limited for children younger than two. While data on the exact number of in-home facilities that have been closed due to HOA restrictions is not readily available, the members and partners of MAC have reported dozens of anecdotal examples, and I'm sure that you've received some of those in your inboxes. Not only would this bill increase availability, but the DPHHS market rate survey demonstrates that in-home care is more cost efficient, an average of about $10 cheaper per day for in-home care. Restrictive HOA covenants compromise the property rights of individual homeowners by limiting a property owner from operating a lawfully licensed regulated child care in their home. These in-home facilities are still held to the standards required of any other child care facility for safety and spatial regulations. There are certainly no easy answers to solving our child care crisis in Montana, but there are viable options that will increase slots while maintaining health and safety standards for children when parents must be in the workforce and want to re-enter the workforce. So we urge a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jake Brown, B-R-O-W-N, here today with Shelter Whitefish, a nonprofit with the mission of addressing or advocating for solutions to Montana's housing crisis. We're going to rise in support of this bill as well, especially just, you know, really for the ADU component. ADUs are affordable. They're good for infill. They offer a way to include smaller, accessible, affordable homes in established neighborhoods. They have minimal visual impact, and they don't add to an area's sprawl. So we're big fans of them. We're going to be super brief. We just urge a due pass. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Appreciate the brevity. Are there further proponents for Senate Bill 376? Further proponents? Seeing none, Mr. Campbell, are there proponents online?
There are, Mr. Vice Chair. First, we have Dan Brooks. Go ahead, Dan.
Good afternoon, Mr. Vice Chair and members of Senate Local Government. My name is Dan Brooks. That's B-R-O-O-K-S. And I represent the Billings Chamber of Commerce. We rise this afternoon, evening, in support of Senate Bill 376. At the risk of using a metaphor more appropriate for the Fish and Game Committee, the provisions of this bill kill two birds with one stone. Our business community is in serious need of solutions that provide more childcare and more housing. Allowing for more accessory dwelling units can provide part of our solution to the housing crisis and other benefits as well. Those include substantial increases to property values for properties adding ADUs, little, if any, additional infrastructure is required. And it provides the opportunity for seniors to age in place by creating additional revenue sources to those on fixed incomes. Along with those housing benefits, the bill addresses our childcare needs, which are significant as well. In a 2021 survey we sent out to our membership, two-thirds of respondents indicated that staff were dealing with a childcare shortage, which wasn't surprising considering a Montana Department of Labor and Industry report indicated licensed childcare capacity in Yellowstone County was only serving 54% of our demand. In our survey, members also indicated how their businesses were trying to get creative by offering flex time, increasing telework, and even subsidizing childcare when employees could find it. Our businesses are innovating and trying to meet the challenge. Now we're asking the state to help the private sector to continue to make progress. This isn't an ask of the state to provide funding, just to allow more childcare options to be offered in our local communities. Mr. Chair and members, we encourage your support on Senate Bill 376, which we view as a workforce bill that will provide significant benefits to our businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Campbell, are there further proponents online?
Mr. Vice Chair, there is. Next, we have Mike Veselik. Go ahead, Mike.
Good afternoon, Chair and Senate Local Governing Committee members. My name is Mike Veselik. That's V-E-S-E-L-I-K. I'm an Economic Development Program Manager for the City of Bozeman. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 376 on behalf of the city. Let me provide an example of one of these zombie covenants. In Bozeman, we have four plots of land located at one of our busiest intersections, North 19th and Durston Avenues, where more than 35,000 vehicles travel by each day. A prime spot for density and infill in any situation. However, these plots are still governed by covenants adopted in 1965 when the properties were outside city limits and Durston was a dirt road. Those covenants restrict development to single family homes. Current city zoning would allow 27 homes on the site with the opportunity to add ADUs by right. That brings us to a total potential for 23 homes on the site currently blocked by covenants adopted nearly 60 years ago. SB 376 would create an avenue for owners to amend outdated covenants so our children and children's children in 2081 are not stuck with decisions made today. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee, for hearing my testimony supporting Senate Bill 376 today. I look forward to any questions you may have, answering any questions you may have, and urge a due pass.
Thank you. Next proponent online.
Mr. Vice Chair, next we have Aaron Moots. Go ahead, Aaron.
Good evening, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Aaron Moot, that's M-O-O-T-F, and I'm here to support Senate Bill 376. I owned and operated a licensed residential in-home daycare beginning in 2014 through 2020 in Billings, Montana. Josephine Crossing is a great family-friendly neighborhood, and it goes without saying that daycare was an absolute asset to us. I was always at my $12 per child per day limit. Beginning in 2017, I received a letter from the JSP Cottage HOA regarding some concerns they had with the daycare. It was things such as kids using sidewalk chalk, diapers and garbage cans, increased traffic, extra noise, etc. I personally addressed these concerns with the HOA board and made modifications to resolve these issues. The HOA then presented me a variance that allowed the daycare to operate but keep from other businesses opening in the future. In 2019, the HOA informed me that there was a complaint against the daycare and decided the variance that was created was null and void and I was no longer protected. I was informed the bylaws do not allow businesses, even though both city and licensing stated that I was in compliance. We ended up in arbitration and the arbitrator ruled for the HOA. On top of all of this, we're in the middle of a global pandemic and I had many parents who are essential workers who now had to find childcare. Parents with children under two were struggling, especially since infant care is impossible to find. At the time of my closing, I had six children that were under two. Childcare Montana is such a needed service and I was heartbroken to have to put 13 families and two employees out because of all of this. My situation ended with so much hostility that we ended up selling our home and moving out of that HOA. Because of my experience, I believe that Senate Bill 376 is a must, and I support this bill 100%. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent online.
Mr. Vice Chair, our next proponent is Tori Sproles. Go ahead, Tori.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tori Sproles, S-P as in Paul, R-R-R-O-L-E-S. I'm the executive director of Childcare Connections, the only childcare resource and referral agency serving Lewis and Clark, Jefferson, Broadwater, Gallatin Park, and Marr counties. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 376 today. As an employee of Childcare Connections, we work with the local childcare providers on obtaining and maintaining childcare licensure and providing exceptional care to children and families. As mentioned already, we have a shortage in childcare. There are many factors that contribute to the shortage, but space is a major barrier to expanding access to childcare in Montana. There are many qualified caregivers that are interested in starting programs, but face the obstacle of finding a space. Climbing prices are pushing childcare businesses out of commercial buildings that are unaffordable, and they are left with no other option but to operate their programs on residential property in their own homes. Home-based childcare programs check many boxes to be able to operate in their home. They must meet health and safety standards required by childcare licensing, and they are held to local zoning regulations. Despite meeting all of these requirements, programs are still faced with restrictions from homeowners associations and covenants. Similar to Mrs. Moots' experience in our work with childcare providers, it is becoming more common for us to use to get these panicked phone calls from providers telling us that they've been asked to close their program immediately. After years of operation, they have been notified that they're in violation of either HOA or covenant rules. When covenants forbid home-based childcare services, property owners are faced to relocate their facilities or go out of business. Home-based family and group facilities are providing invaluable services to our community. Removing this barrier could expand opportunity for individuals to operate a safe, regulated childcare business within their home and meet this very real need within our community. This bill would be one innovative approach to increase access to childcare. I urge due pass. Thank you for letting me speak today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Further proponents online?
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair. Lastly, we have Stephanie Baucus. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Mr. Chairman, Senators and Senator Bogner, thank you all for letting me testify today. Again, my name is Stephanie Baucus. It's B as in boy, A-U, C as in cat, U-S as in Sam.
Ms. Baucus, it sounds like you're breaking up.
Here in support of this bill in my capacity as an attorney and owners, and I'm in support of on behalf of a homeowners association with respect to a daycare facility. And this bill would actually help clear things up a bit, I believe, because it is certainly wonderful to have more daycare, as the mom of two kids explains that, you know, it is permitted and certainly residential capacity, so home-based, some of the language about the zombie covenants, because as of now, there are homeowners associations that have covenants that require unanimous consent
to ever get rid of them or ever remove them or change them. And so having the standard of, you know, the
Ms. Bacchus, we're losing
it. Point of privilege. Ms. Bacchus, can you say you're for or against it because you are not coming through properly? Mr. Campbell, let's go on to the next person, see if she can get a better connection coming back.
Yes, Mr. Chair. She was the last proponent.
Ms. Bacchus, if you can hear us, if you can get a better connection, we may be able to allow you back on to finish your testimony. Otherwise, we're just going to move on to opponents. Thank you.
I don't think she's coming on.
Mr. Chair, she is raising her hand. I could try her one more time.
One more time.
Go ahead, Stephanie.
Yes, I'm so sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for your patience. I am returning from a hearing today and driving through a bad area. I've been on the Zoom the whole time. Sorry about this. So I just wanted to also add...
Yeah. Ms. Bacchus, we're losing you again.
Ms. Bacchus, if you want to go ahead and give us a written testimony, that way we don't lose it.
Yeah, I think we're going to move on to opponents. Mr. Chair, did you want to take the gavel or do you want me to just keep running it?
It's up to you. I can do it for you if you like.
Okay, I've been giving everyone about a minute and a half.
That's what my wife said. We will now go hear testimony from opponents on Senate Bill 376.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bill Gowen, G-O-W-E-N. Here's a member of the Legislative Committee for the Montana Land Title Association. You remember when I was up here last week, one of the folks testifying had a nice little handout, so I thought I'd do one that's not quite as cool and color-coordinated. But
you can hand it to Senator Bulbin.
Thank you. We rise in opposition to this today, and in the parts in Section 1, I think, you know, if the body decides that child care is something that needs legislative fixes, I'm certain that can be done. My real issue is to start with what a covenant really is. Now, a covenant is an agreement between two or more people or groups of people to do something or not to do something. That's what it is. So it's an agreement. When we look at it under this section of code, we look at 7017, 201 through 204. And that limits that to covenants that run with the land. And that's the idea. When you have an easement, it runs with the land, so you can continue to use it. And that's kind of one of the problems that we see that is unintended consequences of this legislation. There's a misnomer out there that there's only one kind of private property right, and that's if I get to use property to do something I want to. But there's other property rights that have equal protection under the law, and that is in our Constitution. And frankly, that protective covenant is a property right, and it has to be held on equal footing with somebody's right to use. And those covenants were in place and of record prior to that buyer buying that property. It's called constructive notice. That means when it's recorded, they are under the law, know that's there, whether they do or don't. And that's part of what we do is in that title search is provide that information so a buyer can beware. So sometimes these fixes for things like zombie covenants, I think there's some much simpler ways to do that, and I'm sure that other folks will talk about that. I did want to just go into this little handout a little bit. I did kind of doctor this together. I use my own property off the cadastral, so it really doesn't exist on this map, but this is definitely something that has and will happen. Pastor Johnson. This is a pastor of the local church. Across the street from his church, he owns some acreage where his home is. He does a five-lot minor subdivision where he gives, or not a minor subdivision, but a gift to family member survey, an exempt survey where he creates five whole lots, one with his home, one for each of his two boys, his daughter, and one for his wife. Now, he, Mr. Johnson is a pretty savvy guy, and he knows that that property someday may sell, in all or in part. He also knows that some of his children don't walk quite as close to the Lord as he would like them to. So he doesn't know what they're going to do. So he does want to protect that property and the church that's next door. So he puts on a deed restriction, a covenant, of which that buyer initials. And you can flip to the next page and see some of that, and then a sample of the deed. Now, he doesn't want a strip club next to his church. He doesn't want a marijuana facility next to his church. He doesn't want to have a bar next to his church. He owns that property, and that is his property right to protect that property and to have that not happen. He has that right. And this would say 5 years from now, that could go away. That's not his intent. It is his property, and he has that ability to do so. So I also think the real problem with this is just having something disappear in 5 years is very, very problematic. Some of our associations don't even really operate. They function, but they don't operate. Some of our associations own infrastructure, or they have duties to ensure infrastructure. Very important. So there's kind of a carve-out here. But what about a water right? What if that water association has covenants and it goes away? Who owns the water right? So those are just some of the problematic things. I don't think it's a good idea to have a five-year plan. It didn't work for the Soviet Union well. We shouldn't have it here. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent. In the room or in the hallway?
Good evening. My name is Alana Griffith, G-R-I-F-F-I-T-H. I'm an attorney out of Big Sky, Montana. I've been practicing 20 years. I represent over 400 owners associations, and I also represent over 100 owners against their associations, so I'm not a one-trick pony. I do both sides. I also happen to sit on the Big Sky Morningstar Learning Center board, and I also work with Big Sky Housing Trust. So if this were just about child care, if this were just about affordable housing, I'd be on board, but unfortunately it's not. I'd like to hand these to you.
Please hand it out to Senator Boldman, please.
All right. What I've handed you is some really great reading material for sleep. These are my set of covenants. What I want to expand on are what are actually covenants, because this is really important. Covenants are not defined in what is before you, and so it is incredibly expansive. We always think about use restrictions, right? And I did upload these onto your site so you can page through them at your time. Look at the title, the table of contents. Covenants are not just the use restrictions. Only 4 pages of those 60-page documents are use restrictions. There are also easements, mortgage requirements, and insurance requirements. And easements, guys, that's everything. Those are all of your private easements, and those are covenants. And there is no carve-out for easements in this bill. So if you rely on a lovely neighbor to get to your property with a covenant, that is an easement, and it is legally, then that can go poof in 5 years. I'm sure your neighbors love you and you get along with them very well, but this is a possibility. Also, keep in mind, HOAs also, a lot of them, particularly in where I am, there are public trails, public parks that HOAs take care of and must insure. If these go poof, they will not be able to get their insurance. Insurance is one of the most difficult things to get as an HOA. And you then are making all of those owners associations members personally liable for what happens on the parks and the public roads that they are forced to maintain because the county and city does not want it on their tax rolls. Last, please know I'm a member of the Better Section. We just had to deal with the Land Use Planning Act. Thank you very much for all of you for looking at that and working with that. We are now taking up the Uniform Act on the community associations and owner's bill of right. You will see that in 2 years, and this should address the issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's Sam Sill again. That's S-I-L-L.
here on behalf of the Montana Association of Realtors, and we share a lot of the same concerns that the other opponents thus far have expressed. So I'm going to try not to be repetitive, but I think one of the issues we have with this bill is that there seems to be this underlying assumption that covenants out there are burdensome and they're zombie covenants, and basically the default going forward should be for them to expire. In my experience, at least from what I hear from my folks, most covenants generally serve a legitimate and important purpose. They benefit properties, they benefit the property owners, and they protect the values of the property, and they manage the expectations of the owners. Certainly, if you were to be in a subdivision that allowed child care, as some of our proponents are concerned about, you wouldn't want a porn store or a marijuana dispensary or grow operation to be able to put in be put in next door, right? I mean, that's an issue. Even out in the rural areas, it's great. People could have a couple horses, but you probably wouldn't want to have a pig farm next door. And I think one of the big issues with this is HOA boards are they're run by volunteers most of the time. A lot of them don't have professional management. People come, people go. I think it's asking a lot of these organizations to frankly remember and execute re-upping their covenants every 5 years. That's going to fall through the cracks and covenants are going to go away, and what is left behind will more than likely be messy. Something to keep in mind on the housing front, I know that's a big concern for everybody. Developers use covenants when they start a subdivision, particularly if it's a phased subdivision that's going to be built out over the course of years. And the reason they do that is to ensure as houses start getting built in the first phase that the remaining phases remain marketable. And one thing that we've found, this is just sort of a human nature thing, the people in the first phase don't want the second and third and fourth phases to be built. And if the developer loses control of the covenants, savvy people in that first phase will use the covenants against them if they lapse, if they just refuse to reaffirm them, and will use the covenants against the developer to try to tank the subdivision. So that's, not going to be helpful on the affordable housing front. I also think that there's a significant potential for litigation. I think if this is passed, we'll see lawsuits by property owners against the HOA if their property is devalued due to the HOA forgetting to re-up the covenants. So a lot of unintended consequences here. This isn't a good bill. Vote no.
Thank you. Next opponent in the room or online.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good evening. Rhonda Wiggers, WIGGERS, and I've been asked by a local HOA to represent them, and all the speaking points I had have already been said, but one of the members who had planned to testify and needed to leave for personal reasons left me her testimony, so I'm simply going to submit it for the record.
To hand it to Senator Bowman. Next opponent. In the hallway or in the room? Seeing none. Mr. Campbell, do I have any online?
Mr. Chair, we do. We have Bob Sewell.
Go ahead, Mr. Go ahead, Sewell. Bob.
Robert Sewell, S-E-W-E-L-L, representing the Montana Land Title Association. I have a couple points in addition to what has already been said. I don't have any comments as to Section 1 for ADUs or childcare. Section 2 as to covenants, there's a lot of discussion. This is implied to apply to HOAs, and Section 2 is silent as to a homeowners association. It strictly talks about covenants. And I think that's, in addition to what's been said, the unintended consequences of the tip of the iceberg would be the HOA, the context that we're talking about with residential properties. And there are many covenants that apply to real property that most folks don't really think about until it's a problem, and then they will dig a little bit deeper. A couple examples of that might be a 1,000-acre parcel that's now 100-acre tract areas where it might be a residential property, which is not defined what is or is not residential. They could be acreage with a home or something more in a traditional neighborhood. If there's not an HOA, but there's a deed covenant that was applied to each and every deed on outbound tracts of land after it was subdivided, who's responsible to take up the action to affirm the covenants? That's undefined, and I think that could be problematic. The other piece of covenants would be conservation easements and other like agreements that run with the land. That's the whole purpose of a covenant, and this would potentially get in the way of that. Additionally, in Section 2, lines 24, 25 under 2C, if it's an approved by a government agency, as I read that, if a city council or other government approved a subdivision based upon parkland, the parkland has to do with the covenants that are applied, that would that create then the opportunity that those covenants would never have to be reaffirmed because the government agency approved those covenants as a part of subdivision. Most folks do not understand in whether it's a residential covenant deed restriction kind of a thing or a traditional neighborhood that no action means a no vote. And in my experience, most folks just kind of ignore it and go on with their day and 5 years goes by in a hurry and the covenants would disappear. Thank you all for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Mr. Chair, that is it for online opponents.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. We will now go on to informational witnesses on Senate Bill 376. Any informational witnesses? Seeing none, Mr. Campbell, do I have any online?
Mr. Chair, we do not.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Committee, questions? Senator Mandeville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Veselich, if he's still online.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Veselich. You had mentioned, I believe, that an example of covenants outside of Bozeman or in zone Bozeman prohibiting development. Those covenants, I believe you said, were 60 years old. This bill is only forward-looking. It's not retroactively applicable, as I read it. So would this bill actually solve your issue?
That is, Mr. Chair, Senator, that issue is designed to be illustrative of what could happen in the future without a tool such as this. You are correct. This particular legislation would be forward-looking.
Okay. Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, I also have a question or two for Ms. Griffith.
Ms. Griffith, continue.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Griffith. So you had mentioned covenants, and I might have to have you expound on this a little for me. You mentioned covenants are not just use restrictions. You mentioned easements. Do you mean that easement language can be included in covenants or that an easement itself is a form of covenant?
In Property Law 101 under Nadelson, I learned, and it is under your code that easements are a form of covenants. It is one of the many types of covenants out there.
So follow up, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Ms. Griffith, so if so an easement then, if this bill were to pass, an easement would have to be renewed every 5 years as you read the bill?
Correct.
No, follow up,
continue.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, so I want to throw an example.
Ooh, good, law school.
So I recently reviewed a subdivision that had a multi-user drain field on it. And I know that this bill has a carve-out for shared infrastructure, but the way this multi-user drain field was designed, they were individual lines that ran to a common mound system. So each individual lot owner owned or had an easement for their sewer line and then their lateral within the mound system. So would that be individual infrastructure that would have to be renewed every 5 years, or would that that multi-user system fall under this this shared maintenance of shared infrastructure provision?
Well, and my other, so I have two places that I practice in all the time, and the other is development. So I'm very familiar with those types of shared systems. And the answer is, I don't know. I think we would go to court and we find out from a judge. And personally, I'd rather keep my clients out of litigation.
Okay, and follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Griffith. So in a situation like that, you could end up, this bill could put a subdivision in noncompliance with DEQ requirements?
Yes, it would.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Pope, did you have a question? Sorry, I think I caught your name.
Yeah, I did for Ms. Griffith. Mr. Chair, Ms. Griffith, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Pope. Sorry, Senator Pope.
I'm going to try not to put you too much on the spot here.
Okay.
And your services don't come free, but...
Well, they do today. I'm here for free, so there you go.
But I was impressed with the collective interest that you have across childcare and commercial development and property law. You know, it puts you on the spot. But is there a way to see a little, like, set of maneuvers through what we're talking about? Because I personally see, having been a previous commercial realtor for 15 years, Mr. Chair, I mean, I can see all kinds of problems ahead.
Yes.
With the plan, but the plan is extremely well intended.
It is.
And so, how do we? Is there any ideas for this evening, which is, Mr. Chair, still on the bill? Are there any ideas this evening where we might try and work this, or, you know?
There's a two or three step approach that I think you can take. One. There is actually a way to address zombie bills. It's very easy. You get a declaratory judgment from court. You go in, no one shows up, and in 30 days, the covenants are gone. I've done it a handful of times. Mm. One of the other steps that you may want to take is, I think there is actually a good bill, and I did not come opposed to it, and that was, you're defining residential use to include child care. And I actually am in support of that. That's not a bad idea, and I've fought my HOAs on that before. You have a very difficult job in that you're dealing with Article 2, Section 31 of the Constitution as well. And I typically wouldn't talk about that, but that is the right to contract. And that is a right under our Constitution, and it works lockstep with our right of property. Hey, I'm born and raised Montana, and I really believe in the right of property. I do. But I think you guys can find a tight fit if you have enough information, enough expertise behind you to say child care is such of an importance that it needs to take over that right of contract. I really do, but it has to be a tight fit, and this is just too broad.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Not really, but it's wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Ms. Griffith, thank you, Chair.
Are there any other questions? I have a couple. Ms. Griffith?
Yes, Chair Friedel. Is it Friedel?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, thank you.
Just don't call me late for dinner.
All right.
I'm glad that you spoke in regards to the state constitution. Are you familiar with the federal constitution?
Yes, I am.
And just so I can get your, hopefully, legal opinion, are covenants contracts?
Yes.
Civil contracts?
Yes.
And would this, by chance, by us as governance, impeding on a civil contract be in direct violation of the Article 1, Section 10 of the United States Constitution?
Potentially. Yes. Potentially, yes. That would be up for a court and a judge, and I think there's some interesting arguments on both sides, and we don't have time for me to put on my, you know, my lecture hat here, but yes, there is a potential that it would.
So just to make sure I understand from previous conversations you've had with some of my committee members that this could very well get us into some hot litigation, not only for the state constitutionally, but as well as federal constitution, if we were to pass this bill as is.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Senator Bogner.
Mr. Chair, can I pop in real quick here on that one? Never mind.
You sure? Sponsor. Senator J. January 2nd, 2023, there was something that we all did. What was it? We all swore in to go to defend the Constitution, both Senate, both the state and federal. Correct.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Senator, just to give you a heads up, we need to fix this bill because it does go in direct violation of both the state and the federal Constitution in regards to covenants.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to, with all due respect, I'm going to object to this line of questioning. I don't think we are determining constitutionality right now.
That was going to be my comment, or close to it, as far as the applicability date being on or after.
I will change my statement. Sponsor, your bill does go in the fact that you're going to try to change law. You're trying to use law to change how private contracts work, correct?
This addresses the zombie covenants, Mr. Chairman, if that's what you're talking about. Moving forward.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Senator Mandeville?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mandeville.
Senator Bogner, was there a legal note on this?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mandeville, no, there's not.
Thank you.
Senator Dunwell?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, question for Ms. Griffith, please.
Chair Friedel, Senator?
Chair Friedel, Ms. Griffith. You know, it's really, I'm a layperson. I'm not an attorney. And you're very impressive, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I just can't see where this includes easements. And, I mean, to me, it just says, look, we need childcare. We need affordable housing. You can, you know, covenants can't restrict ADUs and childcare. Can you suggest a way to amend this? We have the weekend to amend it, basically, that would conform with our Constitution and the U.S. Constitution.
I really want this because of the Morningstar. I mean, I really, really believe in child care. And I work my tail off to try to get childcare into areas. And I fight boards constantly with regards to the residential restrictions, arguing that it does not prohibit childcare. I think you need to strike the sunset. That would be one. But I think until you have more, because what I heard from testimony is that there was anecdotal understanding that HOAs prohibit this and it may have an effect, but until you have studies, you're not going to pass the constitutional test that is required on the tight fit between the restriction that you're trying to make to Article 2, Section 31 of the Constitution, which is your freedom of contract, and that's for example, guys, selling alcohol to people under 21, that's one of them. There was a lot of studies done to show that there was a governmental need to make that restriction. I don't think you have it yet. Do I think the information is out there? Absolutely, I do.
Are there any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, Senator, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for the questions. Maybe just address a couple things here. Let's see here, what do I have written down? Easements were mentioned. You know, I believe easements are required for land use approvals, which if you look at the handout I gave you, I feel would all be covered under Section 2B, both as conditions of approval and to comply with laws and regulations. Now, I don't know if easements are considered shared infrastructure, but I'm happy to add easements after that as well. You know, I want to make this work, so I'm open to suggestions. As mentioned, there was no legal note. This is moving forward. And it was brought up that, you know, board members are coming and going in HOAs. And we saw 50 50-page document that needs to be reviewed. So I think this is important to make sure that members of the HOA know what is in their covenants and that it is approved every so often. That's regarding Section 2. Section 1, I appreciate the questions. We heard just how important child care is to our communities, as well as our housing needs and accessory dwelling units. So I appreciate the questions. Willing to work with any members of the committee on making this work. I feel this is a good bill, and I'm open to suggestions. So appreciate any feedback. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
This ends the hearing on Senate Bill 376. We will take executive action sometime either today or Monday. Sorry.
She said she
goes both ways.
I got a letter from her.
No, she said she also represents.
I can print the letter that she sent me.
Oh, you have to.
Out of one side of her mouth, she said that they can be narrowly tailored for child care. She didn't make it that it was also.
I think it's food for thought, and I have her.
All right, we will now open the hearing on Senate Bill 381. Mr. Chairman, would you like to open on your bill?
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, committee. I appreciate the resilience of my committee staying as late as it is, even though I was just downstairs in House Education, and I found out the speaker was willing to give all members that are staying after 6:30 dinner.
Wish we had a better president.
I apologize. Right? Dinner's right there. I am Senator Chris Friedel, Senate District 26. That is from the illustrious south side of Billings, Montana. My last name is spelled F-R-I-E-D-E-L. I bring today you Senate Bill 381. This is the third part of the suite of bills that I've been bringing you the last couple of days. You're going to ask, well, what are we doing now? Well, this is probably the fun one out of the three. What this will do... And to give you a little background, A-class cities is what this is going to affect. Who is this going to affect? Probably less than 6 to 7 cities total. What this does is it takes Class A cities, wards, and requires them to have one member per ward. What does that mean? Case in point, I'm going to pick on my city. City has 5 wards, 2 members each, 10 people in total, 1 mayor. So 11 people in the council. When I was a former city council, my district was actually had more people in it than a Senate district. And I can tell you without a doubt when I ran, it was very cumbersome. The reason I brought this to you today is I believe that we need to bring it down to one committee person or councilman or woman per ward. The reason I brought it was better representation. At our level, we have House members and we have senators. House members have 10,000 roughly, senators have 20. I think that gives us a good swath for our community to have representation at multiple levels. The reason I brought this is to reduce it down to 5 wards, or in this case, Billings having 10 council people, can bring it to 10 wards. There is law right now that a Class A city can have up to 10 wards. So this is not going to effectively kill the city council or bring it down to 5 members unless they don't change how they have their members. The reason I brought this as well is because we are just finishing up dealing with our redistricting. So this gives the city perfect opportunity to go in, create 10 districts in the city of Billings, and allow for 10 different individuals to run as candidates. This, I believe, will give people better representation, and this is the reason why I brought it. I will now sit for questions, and if there's any questions, please ask me. Otherwise, I ask to close.
All
Are there proponents for Senate Bill 381? Are there any proponents online?
Mr. Vice Chair, there is not.
Are there any opponents for Senate Bill 381? Are there any opponents online?
Mr. Vice Chair, there is. We have Doug Russell. Go ahead, Doug.
Members of the committee, thank you for this time. My name is Doug Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, city manager in the city of Kalispell. I'm not sure, you know, I heard the opening sentiments, but I'm not exactly sure why this is an appropriate bill. City of Kalispell was established in its local governance structure in 1989 by a vote of the people. Went through the ballot election process by petition and had the full statutory requirements that were adhered to at that time. So it was put forth under the process of building up of how the community wanted to be represented, including two members from four different wards. I don't know why we'd remove that action that was established by a vote of the people. We do have a local government review that's required by state law every 10 years, giving every municipality the opportunity to review their structure. And just briefly, for Kalispell, you know, we have two members from each ward, so eight council members and one mayor. The two council members from each ward provides different representation at times within that respective ward and provides for a diversity of thought, not only amongst the entire council, but within that ward itself, which, you know, with nine members of a governing body, we get a lot of different perspectives, and two members from each ward can sometimes have two differing opinions as well through that. So I think it'd be a mistake to start interfering with a duly elected form of government that has established from the bottom and the local population as they intended it to be. You know, they have that opportunity if there's a desire to change it. I would hate to see and go through the transition process that's put in this bill, which would effectively potentially redistrict without the desire to, or to push four members of my council and eliminate them to have the opportunity to run for election this upcoming year. So with that, I appreciate the time, and I would encourage you not to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Russell. Further opponents online?
Mr. Vice Chair, there is no more.
Are there informational witnesses? Any informational witnesses online?
Mr. Vice Chair, there is not.
Questions from the committee? Senator Zolnikov.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The opponent said that they don't know why this is an appropriate bill, so I was going to let the sponsor share his take.
Mr. Chair, Senator Zolnikov, yes. As the opponent spoke, he said he's an eight-member committee. This is not going to stop them from having an eight-member committee. What this will do is, now that they're at the time of dealing with redistricting, like all areas are, including our own body, it'll allow them to go up to 10 individual districts. It is in law that they can go up to 10 districts. So in this situation, if this particular council has eight members, what they would do is just simply change their charter to say, we have eight individual wards, and then they can run in those wards, just like Billings. Otherwise, they also can also, this opponent can also say, fair enough, the city council can only have four wards, and then he would be correct, four would go away after their term is over. So in that situation, it does not restrict the cities from having eight members, five members, four members, or 10 members. What this is doing is it's going to require the cities to actually only have one member per ward. Case in point, one of the reasons I brought this is, in fact, in my own city, one of the wards has two people that live in the same house. Now, do we have a situation where that is proper representation and different ideas when one house contains one ward that deals with 20,000 people? Fair enough. But yes, this does not restrict the city. In fact, I made sure it didn't restrict the city because I did a deep thought in this to make sure that they can keep, even in the city of Billings, 10 members if they choose to. They just have to have 10 single member wards. And I believe The point of our constitutional republic is to have representation, and that's why we're here. That's why we're called representatives. So I believe that with the opposition, I don't know why there's opposition other than we need to do a little more work. Thank you.
Senator Zolnikoff.
Follow up for the sponsor. Mr. Chairman, this talks about first-class cities, second-class cities. Can you just clarify the difference?
Mr. Chair, Senator Zolnikoff, it is, I believe, in 44-4-104, Ms. Henneman? I believe, I'm trying to remember where the classification of classes, it's based on population. And then there is law that allows for each class to have so many wards per classification. And if you are in the top ward, which is only a handful of cities in the state, you are allotted up to 10 individual wards. And this is not does not include mayor. So mayors at large, it's specifically talking about ward mayor, city council people.
Thank you.
Senator Trevis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we had a little bit of a discussion about this already, maybe before this bill came, but my city has at-large districts, so for the whole city. So there's four city commissioners and one mayor. How would that, I'll have a couple questions, but how would that work? Is there authorization for that in the law to have at-large, or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trevis, I'm actually kind of surprised you have at-large, but I believe this puts it at-large. All I know is that if it, in the law it says if you're a Class A or a Class B, whatever it is, you have X amount of wards and X amount of council people. So that might be a small loophole I'm not aware of that allows for at-large running.
Okay. And I can do a little research on my own on that too. But and then, Mr. Chair and the Senator, do you know how the sizes, how the redistricting is done at a local level? Is that by city charter? Is that controlled by state law? Like, how do you decide how to redistrict these wards exactly?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trevis, how it works is it goes top down, goes federal, state, county, city, school district. It goes, so one goes down, the next one comes. So in this situation, there should be relatively here pretty soon, they have to do a redistricting, and by their own charter, they have to do a redistricting, and when they go through that redistricting, they have to vote on it, things like that.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Pope.
Thank you, Chair, for the sponsor. Real quick, I was reading through here, maybe I missed it, but does someone who represents a ward in this bill have to live in that ward?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pope, based on your, city charter, apologize. I know particularly in the city of Billings' charter that you have to live within the bounds of your ward to run in that ward. And I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, I think that is a state law that requires that you have to live in your ward to run in your ward. And it's very interesting because things like county commissioners have to be in the county, but they have to live in their ward. They have to live in their district, but they run city or county wide, which is, I thought, was weird. Why have districts? But I know that at least in the Charter of Billings that it does state that you have to live in the boundaries of your ward. And there was actually a situation last time we had a redistricting that one of the council, I believe the person I replaced on the council, lived in it just outside one of the districts where they actually had to carve her out so that she could maintain her ability to be a councilwoman for the remainder of her time on the committee.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask one more question?
Senator Pope.
Thank you. Just curious, I mean, you gave us a good example of where having two ward members commissioners in one ward wasn't working, or maybe it did. Maybe it worked great. I mean, who knows? But do you have other examples of, I mean, what, you know, having two people, as that person testified from Kalispell, having two people in a ward, you know, maybe it would be that one person's, you know, a little bit more of a certain type and another person's a little different type, and that everybody's getting more representation that way or something. I mean, do Do you have any thoughts on that or comments?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pope, to be honest with you, I think it's actually quite unique that I think only Class A is the only one that has two ward members, whereas every other class does not have two ward members. Okay. So Class A is quite unique with having two ward members, which is really odd. I don't begrudge in people having two wards, and I don't have a heartburn with having two people live in the same house. That's the whole process of elections. My attitude really stems from having smaller wards to allow for better representation, and that's really my key about this bill, was to allow better representation. I'm one of those people where I think that to be the closest to my community, being a city council person, I effectively am. I have something in common with the people I represent. Do I, in the city of Billings, I'm in Briarwood, which is the south portion of my ward when I was on council. Do I have anything in common with somebody that's up on Colton? I might, but I can tell you what was beautiful about my particular ward. It was the heart of Billings, and it cut through different types of communities. You know, you had upper class, you know, expanded out. Then I had some smaller groups where it was more tight, you know, lower income. I had some people that were middle income that had some things, but it seemed like I obviously represented the best of my ability for my ward, but I felt that if I had a smaller ward, one, it'd be easier for me to represent because then I wouldn't have to be going all over the place. And two, it allowed me to actually, you know, be able to really truly represent and be a more constituency based. Like I said, this is a two-member ward, and so having two people the same ward, and we, in fact, when my second half of my stint on my 4 years, we were totally polar opposites of the political arena. My counterpart was a Democratic Socialist. She came out shortly after she was elected. And I was relatively a pragmatic, you know, Republican. And so I love the diversity even between ward mates, but I think it would do a disservice for me to have that kind of swath where in reality, if I were to be the south half of my district and she'd be the north half of the district, I think that her and I would have been better representing our communities. And that's all I'm asking. I'm not really trying to cut anybody out of committees. I'm not trying to cut anybody off. What I'm simply saying is, hey, let's have better representation for our communities. And there's nothing that forbids any committee that's a Class A, at least in this bill, anybody that's Class A, to go up to 10 wards. Yeah. So here's the thing. Kalispell, if they want 10 committee members, they can actually go 10 wards. So it really doesn't restrict them to have four wards or eight wards with four members or eight members. It doesn't get rid of them. It doesn't force them. The only thing that would force them is that if they don't live in those districts, then they couldn't run again. But at the same time, you have to redistrict anyway. So, and that's why I brought it now and made it effectively so that they can make the decision, okay, we're going to go with eight wards or are we going to stick with four and four people go away? Okay. But it also does that, so.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to keep this brief. So, you know, I hear what you're saying about representation. My thoughts, and I want to hear what you think about this. My thought is that it helps to represent a wider area because then you're forced to really think about the diversity of lifestyles, if you will, the urban area and the rancher, and so are your colleagues, and I think so you're maybe more willing to, you know, see how they dovetail or not in some cases. And I just think that might be better done on a citywide basis. What do you see in that perspective, and can you respond to that, please?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunwell, here's what I can tell you. You've obviously seen the maps of our districts in the Senate. In the House districts, right? Currently, the one that we just sent off. Can you? I can tell you, half of these you committee members right now are probably got a large rural area you're picking up. In fact, looking at the good senator in front of me, he's from Miles City. His portion of the state is rather large compared to the portion of the state I represent, which is on the map is this big, on the map for him, it's this big. So nothing disrespected. He wouldn't do a good job representing his constituency, but can you honestly say it's not a daunting task for this gentleman, this particular senator, have to go from one part of his district to the other part, trying to do his best to be that best representative of all of us? And that's all I'm asking for the cities to do, is say, hey, yeah, I get it, they're smaller communities, but at the same time, what's more important, the representation or the fact that we have two people per ward? My idea of a proper governance is that we are a constitutional republic. A republic means a representative. And that's why we have 400-plus representatives up in the House of the federal government. That's why we have 100 here in this body here. It's to allow us to come together as a collective, as a small 10,000 community, to have these conversations. That's why we're all up here. We have different ideas. Honestly, if we have a democracy, if we were a democracy rule right now, none of you would be here because we would be 60% of the state's Republican. And how is that representative? That's not representative. That's why I believe in the Republic, and that's why I ask for smaller community-based, even if it is in a smaller city. It's at least that way. You're community-based, you're small enough that you can be a true representative to your community.
Okay. Quick follow-up. This is just a quick one.
Senator Dunlop.
Thank you, Ms. and for Senator. My city, Helena, one of my two cities. Well, Helena has seven districts. We don't have wards. So wards translate to district? I mean, or do we need something that says that in this bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunwell, that's just the language that they deal with when it comes to those. Technically, they should be, based on the law, that those are considered wards.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Whether you call them districts or not, that's what they call them in the text is wards.
Okay.
Any further questions? I have a few for the bill sponsor. I don't know if you have the bill in front of you, but in section 4, I just maybe want to walk through some of these dates. So there's a June 1st date, there's a June 19th date. I guess first, do you know if any of these Class 1 cities have already published new ward boundaries?
Mr. Chair, I am not fully aware, but I believe that they are in the process of dealing with them right now. And that's why I had an effective date immediately so that they can start drafting them if they decide that they want to change that up.
Okay. All right. I hope that they don't get these new ward boundaries through public hearings and published before the passage and signage of this bill, so they have to do the process over before June 1st. I just don't know. I don't know if those dates align up, but I think you answered my question. Maybe not. Do you think that's enough time from, you know, if this bill is signed on, let's say, May 1st, is there enough time to do public comment in the process to get new wards determined by June 1st?
Mr. Chair, there's only a handful of cities that would be required to do this. And if you look at the verbiage that we put in there, we carefully crafted it so that, and bear in mind, these city council people will serve out their term until the end of the year. So they're not, these people, that's why there's time limits in these, like 2024, that they will serve out the rest of theirs. And here's the situation, Mr. Chair. Even if we would not have this bill and they had to do redistricting, this still would occur. Does that make sense? So any new districts that are formed in the event that one of the ward council people were not to be in the ward that they represent currently, that they would have to step down or have to run in a new ward come this election cycle. So all this does is just say, hey, while we're dealing with districting now, let's go ahead and have this conversation so that we can get this done so that they can make those districts so that they can go forward. But I will tell you this, that they will be dealing with this for the next 4 or 5 months. So this gets done here in March. They'll have plenty of time.
Okay. Two quick questions. In your opening, I believe you said you'd serve on the city council of one of these first class cities. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And would this directly affect any city council members that you served with?
The council, as of right now, any council people that are serving right now when I was on council are all going to be termed out. They've already served 8 years at this point, Mr. Chair. So they will. We have a term limit of 2 terms, and they would be all termed out. Anybody I would have any kind of affiliation, I guess, is that what you're asking? Is anybody I serve with is on there? There's currently people, but they are all termed out. They will be termed out by the end of the year, so they won't be running again, regardless of whether we do this or not.
Okay. Any further questions? Seeing none, the bill sponsor closed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. I know it's a long day, and I'll try to keep this brief. All I'm trying to do is give better representation to cities, and that's what I'm asked for. Do pass. Thank you.
This ends the hearing on Senate Bill 381.
Committee, I'll give you a couple options tonight. We can spend the next maybe hour to get these out of here and call it good for the week, and we will probably don't have to really show up at noon Monday. The next option is we call it quits for tonight, deal with this on Monday, like we did the last couple of days at noon to 1. However, there is a couple bills that we will have possibly on Monday morning. However, I won't start at 8 o'clock because I think it's only two at this time. Ms. Hinman, am I correct? They're two really brief ones for the most part, so it'd be like a 10 to 12 to handle the both hearings, and then we just go into EEA for everything we've heard up and including that morning. And then we would again have a afternoon committee. I believe we have five, or do we have more on Monday? As of right now, the afternoon has five. So the option is I could take those two on Monday, put them on, and we do EEA for everything on Monday, for Monday, and then come in at, like, say, noon and just deal with what we've already heard. Or we can all just dump everything we've heard on Friday, Monday afternoon. And we would basically be dealing with seven bills, up and including a seven bills that we would do EEA on. So it'd be seven bills plus what we have right here, and plus a couple that we had from this morning. So you're probably looking at how many EEAs?
Mr. Chair and committee, if we don't get any more bills and we hear all the bills that we have, there would be 18 EEAs that we would need to take. So,
Mr. Chair,
free to talk.
Do you have a deadline of like 5 o'clock on Monday to get the EEAs all in?
Monday's fine. Tuesday's our problem.
Oh, but we don't meet on, well, we could meet on Tuesday.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pope.
I'll just say, you know, I'll do anything that the group wants, but I'm smoked.
I agree, and that's why I don't want to hammer us on next Monday, because I'm sure it's going to be a heck of a day tomorrow. That. So I'm trying to keep us from getting burned out. I know it's been a rough one. A couple of us have served on this committee last session, and this is a lot for a B committee. And I'm not, and I am, you guys are superstars, and I appreciate your guys' willingness to get this stuff done, and that's why we're here. Senator Bogner?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, we've been in here all day. We heard a lot of bills. Me personally would like the weekend to digest what we heard so that, you know, as a committee, we're doing our due diligence. So I prefer to do any executive action Monday or Monday morning, however you decide. But I would prefer that we wait through the weekend.
Sounds like Friday's off the board, which is fine with me. How do we want to handle Monday? Do we want to have a morning committee to handle those couple bills and then have executive action for lunch and then basically deal with the rest of it on Monday evening? Or how do you guys want to play that out? I'm open for suggestions. I'm giving you guys because you guys,
My two bills, we just do executive action after, right?
So what we would, so Friday's off the board. So at this point, all executive action that we currently have right now, up and including the two bills we would hear on Monday morning, we would take executive action at noon Monday. And then we would come back. Unfortunately, we still have five or six bills on Monday afternoon we still have to have heard, including having to do executive action on those as well.
Eric, can we come in early Monday morning and knock out these EAs?
I will have to disclose the fact that I probably won't be here. I am in judiciary. Uh-huh. And just to put in perspective, I'm about to hear about 12 bills. That's as of this morning, my committee chair told us we have about 11 bills that we're going to hear on Monday. That's not including the executive action. However, as an A committee, and we got to spread that around. But I'm just giving you a heads up. I probably won't be here, so y'all will have to be here probably without me for some of that. And I just want to make sure you guys are aware of that.
It's going to
obligations.
So, Mr. Chair, so can we meet at 9 on Monday, listen to the two bills, and right after the two bills, just do the executive action on all everything we have so far?
Any comments on that?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a great idea.
Yep.
Sounds like a plan. Ms. Henneman, so what we will do is we will go ahead and come in here at 9 o'clock, bang out those two bills, and then we will EA on everything we've done up until that point, and then we will deal with the afternoon six bills, and then we'll EA those out of here as well. Senator Bogner.
Mr. Chairman, since we are going to take executive action Monday, there is a bill that appropriated some money that before we take executive action, I'd like to request a fiscal note on. That's Senate Bill 346.
Can you bring that one up for me, please? I apologize.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think it should open here.
I believe that is going to be on, that one I believe is on Monday evening.
Is that the Willis bill?
That one's scheduled for Monday evening. So that one is, we will have to... I heard that there is a fiscal note coming for that. I don't know if it's going to be here in time, but we'll see. Our staffs are running overtime trying to get this stuff done, but that's actually been scheduled for the last bill on Monday night. So we will not actually even have executive action on that until Monday evening.
Okay.
And the reason I left it to the last one on the day is because we were hoping that the fiscal note will come.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, are you positive that a fiscal note has been requested?
I'm not 100% sure. That's only through talking. I just got this bill today. I told the sponsor that it's going to go on Monday afternoon. That's the best time I can give them. Unfortunately, I'm a B committee. I do not know if a fiscal note has been requested. Ms. Henneman, if you can pull up that bill, maybe there. I'm sure there is. That's all it is. It's a matter of going online and seeing it.
Mr. Chair, so there is not currently a fiscal note requested, but a chair of a committee can request that a fiscal note be accompanied with that bill. At this point, it would be odd if they could get it done in one day, on Monday, but we could put the request in.
There's a request that might go in, but, I mean, in that situation... we will see where we're at. There may not be a fiscal note. I don't know. So in that situation, I just know that's going to be that bill. That's going to be that bill last on Monday.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dunwell.
Fiscal notes. I just wonder if we have an update on SB 403.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dunwell, yes, that one did show up. So we'll have copies of that. It's posted online if you want to look at it over the weekend. It is
okay,
there.
Okay, good.
You know, honestly, I mean, if it's a big deal, to ease the mind, let's go ahead. And we'll worry about that on Monday.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
One thing, Mr. Chair, how are we doing on proxies? I'm going to be four of those bills in judiciary on Monday morning, so.
make sure, vice chairs, you speak with your caucus. Make sure you have a hefty amount of proxies because I know you guys will be all over the place. So, Lorna, if you could do me a huge favor, if you don't have them now, let's have them by Monday at the latest morning. That way they have enough. I would just be honest with you. Just give everybody 16, worst case scenario. We have the second half of this session to deal with them anyways. So we will be in and out. So that being bear in mind, as I said, we're going to get through these two bills, then we're going to start doing EA. I will try to be as brief as possible. Ms. Henneman, to kind of give you the subject matter of the two bills on Monday, the adverse possession laws is one of them. These two right here. Uniform duration limits for latecomer agreements. That's a Travis bill. So I do suspect those two bills being relatively heavy.
Mr. Chair and committee, I can say that these are two bill topics that I have never had in committee, so I don't actually know what to think about them. Can't guess.
So that being said, the plan is on Monday we start at 9. We'll bang out the two bills that we have there. We'll go immediately into executive action for everything that we've heard today, what's left over from today, and those including those two bills. And then we will have a meeting in the afternoon for the rest of the bills. That. You already saw me about 5 minutes ago, and I was just not even all here. That being said, anything else good for the committee? Gentlemen, ladies, you guys did great work. Please, thank you for sticking with me here. You guys have a good evening, and I'll see you on Monday. This ends the committee.